to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
No, it says it that.
It should work.
Okay, so our first item of business, is this loud? Our first item of business will be to vote on our inter-district transfer appeals. I just wanted to comment that this is definitely the most difficult decisions the board makes, and we take it quite seriously. We've had four on the agenda, but three have withdrawn their appeals, so we'll be voting on student number two. So do I have a motion regarding the inter-district transfer appeal for student number two?
I move that we uphold the denial for student number two.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Are those opposed? Abstaining?
Abstain.
No.
So that's four to one. Okay.
4-1-2.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so our next item is, are there any agenda changes, deletions, or additions?
None this evening.
I actually have something I wanted to say. It's not a change of the agenda, but I have updated the board pad, and I have emailed you all something just while you were in closed session. The Teachers Federation presented some very wonderful contract, some language changes to one of the board policies that were presented to you this evening. And I meant to bring hard copies, but I forgot them. So I have sent it to you electronically, and I'm happy to provide a hard copy to anyone or any member of the public who would like to have it. But I just wanted you to know that, of course, the policies are just here for first reading tonight, you know, but so you still have plenty of time to look at the changed language. But I wanted you to know that I forgot the hard copy, so I sent it to you electronically, and uploaded it on board
pads. And we'll speak to the shifts during that item.
Yes, and during that item, we'll talk about it. Thank you.
Okay, now it's time for public comment. Is there anyone that would like to address the board for items that are not on the agenda?
Good evening. I'm Casey Carlson from the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers, and I want to introduce my team tonight. We're one member short because Elaine Balaban just got back from New York. Her mom, who's 89, has breast cancer and had a stroke. So Elaine just got back and had her first day of school, and she's exhausted. But I'm going to pass the microphone. You probably know some of us, but we might be in different positions. Now I'm the president as of July 1st.
Martha Dyer, Mission Hill Middle School, and I'm the secretary.
Matt Dyer, I work at Soquel High School, and I'm the secondary vice president.
I'm Mark McConnell. I'm the treasurer and on the negotiating team. Soquel High retired.
Mark's staying with us for one more year, so we really appreciate that. And we had two messages we wanted to deliver the board. First of all, we want the concern that we heard the most from the new teachers and from visiting sites. I went to the sites on the teacher work days, and I remember, I think, Allison, you brought this up, the concern about housing and having some sort of a working, a task force. And it cut across all ages, all levels of experience. I had teachers who are 6 years away from retirement saying, I don't know if I can stay here and retire because my neighbors are all being evicted now for Airbnbs. I've been in this place for 20 years. And then, of course, the new teachers not being able to find a place to stay. So our union is very interested in working with the board, with the district, in any way to look at rental options, to look at building teacher housing, to look at mortgage, anything that we can do to support housing for teachers. And then the second message we have is, Allison, we want to thank you very much for being willing to step up and serve on our school board and wish you the very best in your next adventure.
And I didn't mention it to those folks because we have their contact information, but if you would like to leave your contact information on the sheet of paper up there, then please feel free to do so that we can follow up with you later.
Good evening. My name is Joy Parker. My husband and I have lived on the west side for 23 years, I'm standing here tonight because a new school year began today. It should be an exciting and proud time for students and parents. We have two grandchildren who attend Bayview School. We have been happy with the faculty and administration. The community at Bayview is vibrant and caring. Sadly, the same cannot be said of the physical plant and routine maintenance. Today, we walked onto a school campus that is dilapidated. When I was a student, schools never looked like this. As a taxpayer, I voted for the $50 million bond to improve our school, and I'm happy that it was approved. That's well and good. My worry and complaint is that you don't take care of what we already have. There seems to be no basic maintenance done to the schools now. What has been done to the Bayview over the summer? I do know that a new roof is being installed at the school and a new playground has been added. What about the peeling paint? Why can't you spend a few $1,000s and do some cosmetic work to the school? Why are they still working on the roof? School started today. There's dust and plastic in the roofs of some of the classrooms. The teachers and children should not be subjected to the constant hammering and debris in the school. Parents and children should be proud of their school. On Sunday, I took my camera and toured the perimeter of the school. What I found was a wall bordering the school on Mission Street that is randomly painted here and there in green paint, not finished. The rest of the wall is covered in remnants of ivy and unsightly, dirty, cream-colored paint, ground littered with weeds and trash. There are weeds and trash in front of the fantastic mural on Bay Avenue at the entrance to the school. At the parking lot in front of the school, I was greeted by peeling paint, hanging pipes off the cafeteria building, dead plants, and a Bayview announcement sign that's hard to read and needs to be replaced. How many of you have toured the school? I don't know. How can you be proud of the school in this condition? I have included a folder of photos I took on Sunday. I don't really care about the bond issue. I know that's going to be implemented in time. My complaint is about basic maintenance. My children, grandchildren go to this school. It's an embarrassment. I challenge you to visit the school and take note of all I've mentioned. I challenge you to do something about the condition of our school and do it now. Thank you for listening.
The rest of you all have a copy of this, but I didn't realize we had 10 people here. So. My name is Edna Brennan, and I'm on the Sister Cities Committee, and we've had a history now starting to come to you at the beginning of the school year and give you a brief update on what's going on, because it's so important. You guys are a vital partner in the work that we do as Sister Cities. The primary work that we do has to do with children. We do have adult delegations, but the primary work is getting young people in junior high and high school to become aware of our sister cities and engage in the world. So there's two projects that we have had ongoing and have had great participation from the district club, and I'm here to tell you about the new one, the third one. So the Hans Christian Andersen is an international writing competition. Our sister city in Italy, Sestri Levante, is where Hans Christian Andersen used to go from Scandinavia in the wintertime. And he wrote many of his fairy tales there. It's a fairy tale competition. We had over 30 entries this year from the school members, students, primarily involving Renee Golder in the Bayview School, had her children write, and many of them won awards and were at the city council, got to sit up with the mayor and the council people and received their awards. So that's a program that we will have ongoing again this year. The second program is a student exchange that we do to Shingu, Japan every year. We send 14 students over there. And it's a remarkable program. There's cultural and language instruction before they go, and then they're immersed in the Japanese culture in a small town, Wakayama Prefecture, for over a week. And many of them say that it's changed their lives. So most of our actual students that go on that are from the middle school and the high schools here in your district. The third program, which we're just starting this year, is a little bit bittersweet. Your 1985 valedictorian from Santa Cruz High School, Graylin Ida Wilson, unfortunately lost her battle with breast cancer this year. Her mother, Nancy Item, was a teacher, and her father, Jerry Item, was actually a teacher in the school district here at Harbor High, the top mathematics for a number of years. It's a tragic loss to the community. And Graylin's brother, Gar, is still living in the community, and their son, Mitchell, is a freshman or sophomore at Santa Cruz High right now, so deeply embedded in the community. The Sister Cities Support Program has raised over $15,000 to start funding the scholarship, and we could have a source of revenue that will provide ongoing every year a scholarship to a student who's a junior or senior in high school in Santa Cruz County. So it's not just the city that includes Soquel High as well. This is our first year, and we're really trying to make sure we get the word out so that we have lots of qualified and eager applicants. For the first year, we're going to have them go over to Japan, because that's where we have a natural relationship. I will have to leave the meeting a little early tonight because we have 14 Japanese students here from our sister city. Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Stuart Rosenstein, and I'm the chair of an organization called the Queer Youth Task Force. We've been around for about 21 years, and our goal is to, the work we do is to support queer youth, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, and questioning students, and straight allies. And I'm here to thank Allison. Well, first, I just want to say that the board and the leadership of Santa Cruz City Schools has a long, rich history of being supportive of queer youth and staff. But I'm here to thank Allison for all your work, wishing you much success in the future. And I just want to say thank you for the leadership you did in on queer youth, both behind the scenes and in front. And you've just been a dedicated parent, a dedicated community member, a dedicated leader, and a passionate voice for queer youth in the Santa Cruz City School System. So I'm thanking Santa Cruz City Schools, and I'm specifically thanking Allison for all your great work. So best wishes. Thank you.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. I'm Stephanie Posh with the Santa Cruz Education Foundation. And I just want to start off by saying Happy New Year. That's the festive part. But I just want to give everybody a quick update on some of the things that we've been doing over the summer, and especially these first couple of, I should say the first day, but the last couple of days in general. And just like other years, the first day started off with a bang. So I know it was a great thing to many. First of all, at the very end, the tail end of the school year last year, the Ed Foundation was able to give out grants to all of the 10 Santa Cruz City Schools. So that was something that we were committed to doing and hope to continue. Additionally, we had a PlayWorks training that we held yesterday, and we had participants from all of the schools, and it was a very, very, helpful and successful training. And it was hands-on for 3 hours, and we were able and very proud to sponsor this type of training. As we know, the climates at schools have significantly changed over the years, and I think it's important to be able to give the teachers the tools that they need to appropriately manage and feel comfortable in different situations with all of our children. And on another note, and by the way, this is Rocco Capella from Center for Support. We have officially received notification that we were awarded the $300,000 grant by the National Council. This is great news, and this grant was awarded to begin the work on a Computer Science for All initiative in our Santa Cruz City Schools, and it was a very close collaboration with Santa Cruz City Schools, Chris, Frank, and a whole village of others, ETR, which is a research firm out of Scotts Valley that focuses a lot on inequities and things in education, and the Santa Cruz Education Foundation as well. So, now that we've been awarded the grant, that's great, and now the work really, really begins. And so with that, I'd like to bring Rocco up to thank and talk a little bit more if you want to about what this means, or just basically I want to say thank you to everybody, Chris, Frank, and Gino and Jill Denner and the whole team from ETR and everybody else. I know I'm forgetting millions, but there's some of you are here and many more are not, so this was really a very close collaboration. And I want to give my sincere thanks on behalf of the Education Foundation for helping us to get this grant. So onward and upward. Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address the board? Okay. So our next item is our superintendent's report.
I'm going to use my teacher voice.
Would you like this mic from the
phone? That's okay.
Do you mind putting on the...
We got to start our day and spend most of our day out at our 10 wonderful school sites. And we took pictures all along the way because I wanted to be able to share with you tonight some of the things that we saw as we were out visiting our schools, observing the many amazing teachers and support staff and school leaders and all our 51 new teachers and a whole lot of kids excited about the first days of school and some wonderful new kids as they were exploring new campuses and finding places and getting to know one another. So we have 51 new certificated staff this year. We have 30 new classified staff this year. This week has been full of student welcomes, web crew in our middle schools, link crew in our high schools, kinder open houses, parent nights, all kinds of things to welcome folks. And I just want, you know, the picture right there of Yvette Garcia, our new Bayview principal, she was with a new fourth grader who was showing her around the campus and making sure she felt secure and safe on the first day of school. So it was a really fun day for the four of us to be able to go out and see all the amazing things happening on our campuses and with our kids. And to see all the work that had been done over the summer by our teams to prepare for the opening. So this here is a French classroom, Santa Cruz High School kids waiting to get their math textbooks, Kathy Marchisio checking out math textbooks, our new Santa Cruz High team, some Galt students excited about getting out to lunch for the first time and visiting the cafeteria, which we'll see in a minute. It was a wonderful day, and we feel really, really privileged to get to work alongside all of the people that made today happen and make every day happen for our students and our families. We also, I want to give a special shout out to the Community Foundation. I found out late yesterday that we received the NSF grant that is going to provide us with $300,000 in collaboration with the Ed Foundation and Education Training and Research. And I just want to express my sincere gratitude to Stephanie and Rocco and Jill Denner, who's also a parent in our district, for the incredible amount of time and energy they put into this. And there are a lot of staff that are super excited. We, for those of you that, I shared a little bit about this in my weekly updates about summer school. We had computer science in our K-8 summer school program, so it was a STEM focus. Kids had math, science, and computer science, whether they were in the elementary and the middle school program. And a lot of excited, engaged kids out at Bayview and Breadth of 40 this summer working with teachers on making incredible things happen on the screen. They taught me a lot, explained a lot to me in the process. I also like to extend a special thanks today to our IT team. In particular, I'd like to thank Belinda Flippo, Curtis Gomez, and Nick Morris for all of the data work that had to happen for us to transition from Infinite Campus to Illuminate. It is not without its bumps in the road, but I did hear a lot of people at site say this was much smoother than our last SIS transition. And we're not there. There's still cleanup. They were working. They were powwowing in the parking lot as we left the Illuminate team. We did have representatives from the firm at all of our high schools and middle schools today because those are the most complex schedules and the most complex issues can arise. So we have tons of support from the company, and we're going to have a debrief tomorrow and talk about what other steps need to be put in place as we continue to make sure that all of the pieces of the transition have happened smoothly and what things we need to shift and change and adjust as we move along. This summer, lots of great opportunity for professional learning and adult learning, and it's important for us as adults in a learning community to continue our learning in an ongoing way. Our Santa Cruz Instructional Leadership Team spent 2 days together this August focused on collective teacher efficacy. This is kind of, the lingo of our work changes a little bit. This is about professional learning communities. It's about having confidence in one another and working together as colleagues to impact student learning. And what they talked a lot about the highest yield research-based strategies and how they're going to work on rolling them out along as we continue to roll out our curriculum master plan and implement Common Core State Standards and the Next Generation Science Standards and the new social studies framework. So lots of work for us to do as professionals. Our NGSS teams met this summer, had professional learning. We had continued to have math trainings for our high school math teachers. There was a large cadre of folks, coaches, administrators that attended a visible learning conference that looked at high yield strategies for student achievement to continue our growth as a district. And we had our first ever all-day classified training day on Tuesday, and it was really a great thing. We are working to build out as part of our goals as a school district and the feedback from the classified working condition survey more opportunities for learning for our classified teams. And our 9-month employees had a whole day of learning. A lot of our 10 and 12 month employees had learning opportunities the week before in our new systems, and they had job-alike meetings. But we're going to continue with a focus on that as we move into this next school year. I also want to thank our custodial and maintenance teams for all of their work this summer. There's always way more work than can be done. We have a grounds crew of 6, and I can't remember our total acreage right now. What's our total acreage?
Total acreage.
Off the top of my head, is about 172 acres, and there's 5 groundskeepers.
So 5 groundskeepers and 172 acres. So they have a challenging task. And many of you have seen the goats that we've had at our 3 high schools over the summer to help with managing the weeds. We also are working to be green and thoughtful about not using weed killers. And part of that plan, when that was presented to us in the spring, means we're going to have to live with some weeds if we're not going to be using herbicides on our campuses, just because we don't have the people power to impact all of that space. But a lot of work has been done. It was evident as we visited every site over the course of the day. And I also want to shout out, a special shout out. We had a major plumbing issue, and as we're doing our repairs with the bond, we'll have fewer of these emergencies, but we had a major plumbing emergency at Soquel High that we had teams working on for 2 days, and they were able to get everything up and running and ready for school today. And it was an intense 2 days, and everybody was holding their breaths, but it was taken care of. The other thing that...
Literally, yes.
There were lots of jokes made about those issues and challenges over the last few days. The other issue that came up was we have a brand new wheelchair student at the Brant Sporty Small Schools campus. And our elevator was closed the night before school started. So it's a 3-story building. And we had Paul Lipscomb and Brian Batard out at the small school's campus at 5 this morning building a ramp to ensure that our new kindergartner had access to her classroom. And they created a space that allowed her to get in and created a new entrance for the whole kindergarten so we could ensure that she had the same experience as all the kindergartners at the small school's campus. So I just want to give a special shout out to them for really, really, they went out late last night, came up with a plan, got the materials, and got it built this morning before the kids arrived at school. We have a really special dedicated team committed to service and committed to meeting the needs of our kids. And there are just so many needs, and it's always a challenge to meet them all, but the team is definitely committed and working hard. The city council asked me to share with you that last night, and you have this on your and on dais, a new ordinance was brought before the city council for first reading. And this ordinance is a school safety zone ordinance, and it looks at parks and other areas around schools, and it changes the laws and the enforcement of laws in the areas around school zones. It puts in extra protections for parks and those areas around our campuses. And we just wanted to show that you may want to contact city council members before the second reading. Mm-hmm. I do think that this is beneficial for our schools and we're in our efforts, too, to keep our campuses safe. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. I'm going to spend the next three days, visiting different municipalities between Morgan Hill and Napa, along with the Chamber of Commerce, as part of an effort with community leaders to look at the issue of housing and workforce housing. And as Casey talked about, we're all committed to finding solutions. We did spend some time over the last few weeks calling everyone we knew to try to find housing for different new teachers that are serving in our schools. Some of the efforts that we've been working on with that, the Landed program that presented to us in the spring semester, that they did come before all of the superintendents, and Michael Watkins has made arrangements for in September to have a kickoff at the Community Foundation to see if we can start to build a county fund that would support teachers with loans for first-time home purchases. Or not just first time, just with home purchases because our region is expensive. So that is going to continue to move forward. If we're able to build a fund, we'll include our different unions in a conversation about how that'll be shared across the county, but it will be a countywide effort, and we're hoping that this kickoff in September will help us begin to bring new dollars in to support that effort. Pat and I also were able to meet in July with a firm that has worked with districts and municipalities on different workforce housing projects. And they recently sent us information, and I think we'll have them come and present to you sometime this fall with different projects they've done with different school districts, with different community college districts, so we could explore as a district what might our next steps be in looking at a potential workforce housing project. Mm-hmm. Also excited that we're planning to attend the ABC Unified West Coast Labor Management Conference with the GSCFT and the SCCE leadership. And that's going to be scheduled for October, and Nancy did all of our registrations today. And just finally, we'll look forward to welcoming our student board reps in September. Frank is working with the principals, and we'll do an orientation for the students before they get started. So, yes. Oh, thank you, Nancy. The breakfast yesterday was wonderful. Amy outdid herself as normal. We had a Western frittata, and we had a veggie frittata and fruit and all kinds of wonderful things, and it's always a great way to welcome folks back. I wish I could serve breakfast to our staff every day. It's a great way to start the day. So it was wonderful. I want to thank Nancy for her work and Amy for her work to make that possible. And I'm sorry for my extra long report, but a lot has gone on in the last several weeks. So
our next item is a presentation of a plaque for outgoing board member Allison Thompson.
So I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you, because this work, it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of commitment to do well, and this board does that. And I feel so fortunate to be able to work with each and every one of you in our service to kids and our community. It truly is a special thing when seven people can come together in the community in service of students and families. And the almost 6,700 kids and 800 employees that are all a part of this organization. And I want to thank Allison for her leadership. I want to thank Allison for her commitment and vision and passion. And I'm so excited for you that you're going to be furthering your career and helping to prepare wonderful teachers. I've told, you know, Molly,
I'll
I was telling her,
here.
We need to, we're going to need
Portland
to
Santa Cruz.
Plan recruitment. We already recruit in Portland. We're going to have to make sure we have a stop when we're in Portland at Lewis and Clark. And tonight I'm going to present to you a plaque and a polo shirt that commemorates your service here to Santa Cruz City Schools. And we are just incredibly grateful.
So I'm going to start board member reports with Allison.
I don't have much to report, except that I am moving to Portland tomorrow at 8 a.m. in the morning, and it's with a heavy heart, I have to say. The job announcement was sent to me in May, which is kind of unusual in the academic world. It was absolutely written. It was like my dream job announcement. There was just this one tiny little thing that would have made it 100% perfect, and that's if it was in Santa Cruz, so I didn't have to leave this wonderful community and resign my service on this board. It has been a total honor and privilege to work with my colleagues. I'm so just amazed at the way we can grapple with things and be respectful and bring different perspectives to our discussions and bring respect and in service of making decisions that are best for kids. So, you know, I look around the room and I think, okay, there isn't anyone that I've agreed with 100%, but every single person, I believe, brings their best thinking, and we've made really good decisions, and I'm proud of the work that we did. I'm also proud to work in a district, to serve in a district that really, really prioritizes teachers, which is something that I'm interested in knowing, really believing that the best way to serve students is to attract, support, and retain excellent teachers, and to grapple with difficult challenges for the good of our students. When I made the decision to accept the job, and my daughter, who started her senior year at Harbor High this morning, she was grappling with whether or not she would move to Portland with me, because it was a big decision. And I wanted to tell everybody that Emma ended up deciding to stay, and she's going to be staying here, my husband's going to be staying here for this year, so she can finish her senior year at Harbor High. But she was really thinking it over, and when she made the decision to stay, of course friends were part of it, but actually what she said to me when she made the decision was, she didn't want to leave her school. She didn't want to leave her school, and she named her teachers. She said, I wouldn't get to take AP Bio with Mr. Lynch, and gosh, what would it be like to not have my ROP photography class with Miss Wilson. And I can't tell you anybody who has kids that go to school every day know that when they come home that first day and they tell you all about what makes them excited to go to school, it's often the adults and the teachers and the community at the school. And so I think that Emma's decision really is a reflection of the wonderful work that our administration and our teachers and our classified staff and our leadership and our board does to make our schools excellent. So I want to also just thank the district and the community for 12 years of excellent education in Santa Cruz City Schools. And it's with a very heavy heart that I leave, and it's been an honor to be of service. So thank you.
I just want to wish you a fond farewell, Allison, and thank you. We came in together as board members, and I learned a great deal from you. as a co-board member, and I appreciate your leadership and your passion, especially for students whose voices are often overlooked or not heard. And I wish you well in your professional endeavors.
Ditto to that. Congratulations on a great job. Good luck up in Portland. A great school. Safe travels up there, and let us know how it goes. And thank you.
I'd like to congratulate you on Allison. You persevered with your education. You were able to have a dream job, and that's wonderful. And it's within education. As a board member who also served while my child was within the school system, I know the great sacrifice of time and pieces to their life that you give up in order to be able to sit in that seat and make the decisions that best serve all. So I'm very appreciative of that and the point of view and perspective that you brought in the voice. I know we'll be back, so we'll be able to catch up, and it'll be great to have the perspective of what's going on up in Oregon. And do send those teachers this way. I'm sure we'll be figuring out some housing solutions that everybody wants to understand. I'd also like to take a moment and thank Stephanie Pasha and Rocco Capella and Jill Denner. I knew that they were on the brink of the grant for computer science, and so I'm happy that that has come to fruition. I think it's wonderful that the district has the collaboration with the leadership at the Ed Foundation, and the fact that along with this, I know that there's the tenacity to make sure that these dollars are used in order to not only serve a program grown out through our younger grades, but also from cradle to grave, all county. So this is a direction that I believe that our curriculum is moving. We have a step up. We have funding. It's going to make our decisions at the board a little bit easier knowing that there's funding coming. I truly am very thankful for the work you do and the vision you have. So also for Jill, please let her know that. I have the opportunity this summer to meet with Deputy Superintendent Ferris Sabah. He has put his name in hopes to be the County Office of Education Superintendent. It was interesting to hear his perspective and what he'd like to bring to our county. I would say to Ferris, should he become our county supervisor, or those who do, that they work their relationship with our governor, whoever that governor might be, to understand the needs of all counties and the commitment to all children in the state. So I thank him for his time. I just want to say, I can't tell you how many people have been so excited about those goats. They have at the grocery store over here. Oh my God, Patty, we spent time. They have them on their phones. They're like, we saw the goats. We were walking through. Did you know they do this? Did you know they do that? And what it made me think is that I know that there are two things. One is not, it sounds like an easy solution, but the constant, hey, bring back that FFA program and have your own goats within the system. I know that that is not as easily done as said. And the second is, I do hope that we have the opportunity to have the goats on sites where some of the younger children can see them for whatever reason, if it's just a day of mowing the lawns or getting to be viewing off the traffic or whatever it means. That would be great. So thank you for our commitment to green practices and how much fun it's been to just be accosted everywhere I go about these goats. And then lastly, it's been a bittersweet summer. I wanted to acknowledge the passing of Ron Walters. Ron Walters was an educator, a coach, and an administrator for Santa Cruz City Schools for more than 30 years. He worked and taught at Santa Cruz High School and was the founding baseball coach at Soquel High. He was a student at Mission Hill High School and graduated from Santa Cruz High School. He played baseball at Cal Poly and San Jose State. He was the inaugural coach at Soquel High from 1962 to 1975, where he then became the AD and retired as the vice principal in 1989. We sadly will miss Ron. His grandchildren attend some of our schools, and his children are in the currently his other some of his other grandchildren are currently in the UC system. You know, we truly are all related here, and so I thank all of you for just taking the moment to think about that.
I found the new teacher orientation inspiring. I was watching 50-plus new teachers nodding as Chris was talking about our district goals and then Frank was talking about equity. And I was just thinking about how great to have all this exciting new energy coming in. And then I thought, well, and also how lucky we are to have the leadership that we have in our district and the solid, experienced teachers that we have as well. So I think it's going to be a great year, and I appreciate that opportunity to meet the new teachers. I also attended the Delta Board retreat. We got together and talked about the plans for the year, and we got an opportunity to talk to meet with and spend time with the QSA student leadership, who are also making plans. They have these really committed students that are meeting monthly to make plans for their school. I read the article that quoted Allison as saying that she'd like to see the the LGBTQ task force continue, and I was thinking about all the things that Delta has done around that. They've developed a curriculum that that talks about the contributions that the community has made, that the LGBTQ community has made, and not just a token way, but really gets down and the task force. I think it'd be great if we could collaborate with Delta in some way. So I'm excited about that, and of course we'll miss you very much. You brought so much to our board, so many so much insight and insight about teachers and I've brought a lot of, and we had fun too. So we'll miss you, but best of luck.
So Allison, I'm leaving you to last because I might, you know, fall apart. So I wanted to ask first if you got a copy of the ordinance when they told you about the ordinance, and if we could get a copy of the ordinance.
It's right here. Yeah, you got it.
See, I was too busy thinking. Well, that's a good excuse. I also wanted to mention that I went to the kickoff for Ferris Sabah this summer, and one of the things that was really great was that the Darling House was packed, and it was tons of people from the South County who usually aren't politically involved up here and are into the world, and I was really delighted to see that. A lot of young people, full of energy, and I hope that we can, here in North County, get just as involved and excited with the chance for this new person taking over. I want to thank all the teachers, congratulate them and the administrators on their first day. It was, you open up Facebook on the morning school starts, and it's just like, it's so touching. Everybody, the kindergarten kids, the high school kids, all of them, everybody proud, yeah. Parents proud, kids looking excited, and it makes me feel like this is why we do what we do. And I know that our teachers and our administrators, as you could hear from Chris's long list, have been working all summer while I've been letting my brain relax. And working hard to make our schools go well. I want to congratulate the Ed Foundation folks. I'm very excited. I didn't really see this coming. I mean, I knew it was coming, but I didn't see it coming. And I really do want to know more about how you plan to use this, and so I'm hoping that you'll come back and talk to us more about it. Okay, I guess that leaves Allison. Allison, when Allison was first thinking about running for the school board, and I met her, I was so enthusiastic about her intelligence, her passion, her willingness to throw herself in, and I really wanted her to run. And she decided not to run because she was a brand new PhD, and in order to get a job as a brand new PhD, you have to publish everything. She still had to publish her dissertation. You have to have more publications. You have to teach. You have to do all of these things. And she completely decided she wasn't going to do it, and we met at, I don't remember what it was, a retirement thing or something, that pool down at Cafe, what's it called?
Paradox.
And I don't know what I did. I sort of thought that I just kind of begged her. But she reminded me that I told her that it really was possible for her to do all those things and be on the school board, and that it really wouldn't take all that much time. And, you know, it would be simple enough. It would be simple. She reminded me of that, and I said, dear God, I said that? I mean, I couldn't believe that I put this poor woman into this position. But the thing was that she changed her mind, and she decided she was going to run. And she has done all of that. And it's been very impressive to watch her do it. She was in the small amount of time that she was here, which probably felt like a large amount of time, she was board president. She worked on the campaigns to bring bonds and parcel taxes to our schools. She was a great force in the task force, and has always brought clear, passionate opinions to all that the board has done. I am really going to miss you, Allison, and I thank you very much for, you didn't just put your heart and soul, you put your whole self into being here. And it's really very much appreciated.
I'll just echo that. I didn't convince you at a pool to run, but it's been a true honor, and you'll be sorely missed. And you know, I can't say anything more than that. It's been wonderful. I would like to thank staff and congratulate everyone for a smooth start to the new year. And speaking of Facebook, I pulled up SCPD. The new police chief was out today, high-fiving all the kids on the way to Bayview, which I thought was really sweet, so I appreciate that. And I also appreciate council's efforts for the school safety zone. As someone who lives near an elementary school and a park, I'm really looking forward to some more attention to the concerns of families trying to walk their kids to school every day, so I appreciate that. And the grant, thank you so much for your awesome work. That's really, really exciting. And extend the thanks to Jill, so thank you. Okay, that's it for me. Our next item is the approval of the minutes from the June 28th meeting.
Move approval. Second.
I'm sorry, who was the first? Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any abstentions?
Abstain.
Okay, so our next item is the consent agenda, and these items may be passed in one roll call motion. I want to remind the board that we can pull items for clarifying questions. We don't necessarily have to pull them for discussion and a vote unless that's something that you'd like to do. So are there any items from the consent that a board member would like to have clarifying questions on? Okay, Jeremy.
Yeah, we've got $2 million worth of contracts, given the fact that we've got a $70 million budget. That's 1/35th of it, or almost 3%, I'd like to pull. For discussion only, 8.1.10.3, contracts and agreements, educational services, special education, and then it goes 8.1.10.3.1, ditto 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and not to forget 11. If someone could just talk us through the that $2 million bucks, and I'd like to make sure that it's being spent wisely, should only take a minute or two. An executive summary, please.
Thank you for that question, Jeremy. This is something that we do every year because of our kids' special education IEP requirement. So this is IEPs that we're committed to services, and we bring these forth every year annually in bunches like this. And it's the specific services are dictated by the IEP exclusively. And it comes to that total amount this year.
Right.
So I just want to add that we spend $13 million of the general fund for special education. It was between 13 and 15 last year. And it changes depending on what IEP requirements are. One of the things I shared with you last year, one of our large expenditures, one of the large contracts here are the one-on-one aids that we provide for students. And there's different agencies and through which we provide those one-on-one aids. And we have a new process in place for monitoring goals around independence, because one of the things we want to do is make sure that we're supporting our students in building their independence. They may need one-on-one adult help at some point in their educational career, but our goals would be to have a plan in place to fade those services over time. So that's one of the things that we're working to do to address those costs. But these are all contracts tied to IEPs, as Frank has explained.
Yes,
I understand that. We've got $1 million for, we've got $1 million for 22 students through the
Abright.
Just 30 seconds, please.
It's one-on-one aids.
Thank you. Then we've got $375,000 for 4 students through the base school.
So school for autistic students?
Yeah, MPS, non-public school service. It's very expensive.
Okay. If you will allow me, this format, it's acceptable. Great. Then we've got $668,000 for 1 student, Bridge School.
Yes, it's school for severely handicapped students.
Okay. Into the Neil Young concert of that name. Then we've got $127,000 for 1 student, Heritage?
Yes, it's a student for, it's a program for older students who need residential.
Older, 18 to 21.
High school age and older.
Then we've got $114,000 for the May Institute.
I am not familiar with that particular MPS, Frank, are you?
Yeah, that's the behavior intervention program for students with severe emotional behavior, specialized services. That's what that's for.
Okay. Almost done. We'll leave that one. We have $46,000 plus for 1 student at Rebecca Children's Phoenix.
That is a local residential program for high school students.
Yeah, non-public school service as well.
Last but not least, and thank you for humoring me, $190,000 for 2 students, Trumpet Behavioral Health.
Yeah, really intensive, specialized programs for those 2 students. That's spelled out in the IEP.
Okay. That's $2 million that has to be spent, and I appreciate you letting me know how we're spending it. Thank you.
Before I take further questions, I want to clarify, are these clarifying questions on the same item, or are there different items that people would like clarifying questions about?
I have a clarifying
different
question on the ones that Jeremy has just
so I just don't know in terms of parliamentary. Should we pull it for discussion and have a vote on these individually, or?
You know, do you, are they questions for clarification? Are they questions for, are you feeling like you might want to pull them?
No.
Not
okay. Go ahead, Dee Dee.
Yeah. No.
Thank you. Go ahead. I'm just going online.
So my question is, when I look at these contracts, I just try to average the ones that are more than 4 figures, and it comes to about $92,000 per student in some cases. But when I look at the details of the contract, it talks about specific services and hourly rates. So my question is, are these services offered only during the school hours for these students, or are they, for some of them, 24/7? I mean, what's the extent or extensiveness of the services that are being offered?
Some of them include at-home services. Some of them include residential services. The majority of them are during the school day services.
Thank you.
Okay. Mine is separate from those items, so if there are
thank
any
you
further in this area.
Sheila, I'm guessing that you might have a I have a couple questions. Trying to keep track of it all. A couple of them are just curiosity questions to figure out what they are. On the purchase orders over $2,500, there's one to the La Viega for, it sounds like it's to pay for consulting services on the shade structure, and it's $13,000. That sounds like the shade structure, not the consulting services, but maybe I'm wrong. And I'm wondering why that would be so high. Trevor, do you know?
I'm not sure which consulting services you're
talking about. It's Kleinfelder. Kleinfelder is a vendor. Confirming for payment, consulting services on the shade structure project.
That's geotechnical investigation required by DSA.
Okay, so it's like investigatory.
It's making sure that we're ADA compliant, correct?
That's all specific to the structural safety and the brake safety.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And the other one is, just a sec, I'll find it. Where did I put? I had it right here, sorry. And now I can't find it.
Can I go to Patty while you look?
I have one other one I can ask, and then you can go to Patty while I look.
While you look?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was interested in a licensed professional salary schedule, and I was just interested as to why we're increasing the salary. Are we having a hard time getting them, or...?
Sheila, they were, I think it was a day and a half or 2 days short of getting a year's worth of PERS credit. So their year worth of work was not getting them a year's worth of retirement credit.
Oh.
So we upped that so that they got a year's worth of credit for the year's work of job that they did.
Okay, thank you. Now I'll look while you...
Okay, Patty.
My question is in regards to 8.1.8, which is the change order for the roofing at Bayview Elementary. And as I do recall, and I have it here in the, actually it comes in under the purchase order change, I believe. Oh, change order 8.1.8 here, so it's under this, and then it comes this way. At Bayview, it appears that, you know, we had a bidding process, a bid was given, it was basically about $200,000 less, that bid was withdrawn, so obviously there was a problem. Where my concern is that, and I understand how this can happen, but I would like it be known that we're talking, it says the project description, to remove and replace approximately 24,000 square feet of flat roofing and associated components. Work period from August 21st through November 11th, 2017. Those dates mean that they just started 2 days ago. Yet I have a change order for 10% for over $51,000 on 8.1.8 from this particular company. I know that these things happen. I know that we went out of the gates the other way. But I don't understand where the power would be in my vote to have something that's already happened come to me to be accepted. I'm hoping that you hear me loud and clear that I don't think this is the way we need to proceed. We need these things prior. And if we're always chasing the gun, then we better find a better way to do it.
Can I speak to that a little bit? And we were able to get them in. That was the planned timeline. We were able to get the contractor in and get started earlier with the goal of being done as close to before school started as possible. And you gave us some leeway in a measure that you passed in June to go ahead and move forward if we could on things. You passed that. I can't remember the exact language of the document that you passed for us in June so that we could continue moving with construction projects. So this was a good thing in that we were able to, they're almost done, and so there'll be far less impact on the Bayview school site than if they had actually started at the late August date. And you guys all gave us permission for that with your item in June.
Well, I understand that, but I do speak to it because it's not the only time that quite often we do find these. So I always am wondering why the consent agenda I'm approving or you're looking for guidance from the board for things that have already happened. And I just need to put that out there because I believe it's our due diligence and it is what sometimes can get you into a pickle. So that's all. that's just out there to be said, and I do appreciate it, and I really do understand that when you get a bid that was $200,000 less, it really must have been too good to be true. So be it. Thank you.
So, and also what happened on this particular project is they found that there was a problem that they didn't know about until they removed the roof. So that's, and that will happen throughout our projects as we do this bond work over the next several years. It's going to happen over and over again.
One last question to that is, when it says that it's 240,000 square feet, is that all the roofs at Bayview? Meaning that this re-roofing project has done the entirety of the buildings at Bayview, or is it just a section of Bayview? Because within our master facilities plan, we're already 3/4 of the way spent there.
So this particular portion of work is phase two. Last year we did phase one where we did existing slope roofs and we put warranty back in place. This is all flat roofs. So this will actually complete all the permanent building roofs at the.
Okay, thank you.
Sheila.
So 180315, it's $60,000 for the Mission Hill Building Owners Association. Quarterly association dues. Now, maybe this has been every year. I don't know. But that sounded like an awful lot for quarterly association dues, so I thought there was something I didn't understand.
Oh, you're talking. She's still talking about change orders.
Oh,
or
change
warrants.
Yeah,
purchase order. Sorry.
Is this for 133 Mission, I believe? I'm just trying to go back.
Yes, it's 133 Mission.
Let me just go back. Yeah, and the aggregate, just give me a minute, Sheila, I'm going to get to the actual purchase order there.
It just says quarterly association dues core budget 133 Mission.
We do pay association dues as a part of owning that joint ownership of that property for maintenance of that property.
Somewhere in the area of $100,000 annually, Sheila. I'm trying to find the exact number here.
Okay, so it says $60,000, so this might be one of two payments, in other words?
Yeah.
Phew. That's a lot. That's for maintenance.
That's the agreement as part of the association for the upstairs and the downstairs. It's a joint agreement.
So they pay it too? Our tenants. Okay, thank you. A request I have that I don't need an answer to now or done right away, but I find myself curious when I see, I know what most of the special ed costs are about, and I've seen them before, but I do find myself wondering if, since we took over some of the programs, whether any of those costs have gone higher as a result of we taking it over. And I'm wondering if we might be able to look at it across years at some point to see if we've had increases of certain kinds of services.
I'm going to tell you that across the county, we've seen an increase in mental health service needs. We've seen an increase in needs for residential treatment in the secondary. And that's been a countywide experience, and it's not just us.
So you don't think there's a difference that has to do with our taking it over?
This is, okay. I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's fine.
It's getting too much. Did you have another question, Dee Dee?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. What item?
This is regarding item 8.1.3, specifically on page 72, the $12,637 for the Harvard High School football uniforms. The question is, if you could give me a sense of the breakdown. The question is regarding the breakdown of what elements of the uniform were purchased, and particularly the helmets, and whether or not the helmets are protecting our students' heads from concussion as much as possible. And then there's another add-on. Do we have those special protective helmets for all of our football teams? The high schools.
I would refer to Hollis. He can speak to that. I can speak to some of the heels.
Sure. Are we asking why?
Hollis, do you mind coming to
that?
No, that's not the question. The question is if you could give me a sense of what aspects of the uniform were purchased, and particularly around the helmets and the quality of the helmets for protecting the head.
Didn't buy any new helmets, but we did buy helmet covers.
Okay.
That's what we've been using for a long time. Not all of our players use them, our linemen and our running backs use them in practice to limit the amount of damage that they get and the hits that they get in practice. Because a lot of their concussions in games are pre-concussions that happen in practice.
Right.
So the coach that we have, James Gaynor, came from a college in which they reduced their concussions to almost zero based on how they taught tackling and how they organized their practices. So he's our lead in all of that. So he wanted those kind of things. And we got certain tackling things and stuff like that. But this particular thing was for portable headset radios and jerseys.
And do you know if the other two high schools are going to get those protective coverings for the helmets, or if they have them?
I don't know. I don't know. I know that they know we have them, and I know that SLBs have them for quite a while.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Alice.
Are you done?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to talk more.
Okay. I am going to go to the public for questions, but I would like to get a motion on the table if we are done with questions and comments from the board on this item.
Move approval.
I'll second.
Okay, are there questions or comments from the public? Okay, this is a roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Okay, where are we now? We are at report of actions taken in closed session.
The Board of Trustees heard an update regarding public employee discipline, dismissal, release, complaint. The Board of Trustees conferred regarding the property at 255 Smith Street and 133 Mission Street. The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and employees, retirements, resignations, and appointments. And we are going back to closed session after the open session to hear information regarding superintendent's annual goals.
Okay. Our first item is a staff report on student-centered master scheduling.
So I'd like to invite up this evening Principal Tracy Ranieri from Harbor High School, Principal Brent Klein from Santa Cruz High School, Assistant Principal Michelle Foyer from Santa Cruz High School, and Assistant Principal Derek Kendall from Soquel High School. And they're going to be here this evening to share with us information about how a master schedule is built and how students' needs are kept at the center of the planning for a schedule and how that schedule reflects the values and vision of a school and the school district. So I'd like to welcome them up this evening to the podium. And I will give you the clicker.
If you can give the clicker here, you got it? You
guys
set that timer
in
3 minutes?
No, I've set it for you.
You get two, Mr. Clinton.
No, I'm the control. 9 seconds. I go all night.
Good evening. Thank you for allowing us to have a conversation with you. Just before I start, Patty, I was just as fascinated with the goats as anybody else. I have recordings I could show you, I have pictures, I share them with people. They're fascinating.
Build it in the curriculum, right here.
No, it was a nice end to my school year to hang out with the goats. And Allison, thank you for the service that you've provided for all of our students in our community. And you talk about adults and community and teachers. They're the ones that that continue to put input and provide insight on what it is that we want to do. And that's the exact people that actually put input on what it is that we need to do in terms of developing master schedules. It's not in isolation. It's not at Santa Cruz High, Michelle Poirier, who has a significant amount of, she does the master schedule. I just kind of throw ideas out, and she really digs them. But it's you're trying to provide an opportunity for all kids to be successful, and that's exactly what it is when you're building a master schedule for all kids. As this PowerPoint describes, and I'm not going to go through it all, a master schedule does all of these sorts of things. It's preparing students, it aligns with so many of the goals for the Santa Cruz City School District. Some of the most important ones that I think occur is supporting the instructional teams. Because if you don't have a strong instructional team, obviously you're not going to have some quality learning. So in terms of building instructional teams, that's part of the master schedule so that you can allow teachers for planning purposes. We at Santa Cruz High School have devoted a particular time of day, so our math teachers have
collaboration time, especially in light of the new curriculum. And it also builds teaming so that you can schedule kids with different teachers throughout one period, so you can be more specific and actually provide students with individualized instruction based on the teaming model. There's lots of variety of programs. I know that, for instance, with Harbor High School, a strong program for the newcomers, a strong program for the English language learners. You make decisions as principals and administrators to allocate those funds to help the students that are a little bit more behind so that they can have the same opportunities as students that come with everything, all the skills, and prepared to learn without much support. But most importantly, it is the student voice. It's not a master schedule that's built because teachers want the afternoon off or they want to have the same timing period as their friend across the hallway. In my opinion, as a principal, it has nothing to do with building a master schedule. It has everything to do with generating ideas and thoughts and interests based off student interest and building a master schedule that's going to reflect their academic goals and their passion. And when you're building a schedule, it also helps you, and depending upon what your goals are in terms of building culture and climate. I know, for instance, as an example for Santa Cruz High School, it's important for me to build to provide students in our leadership program a year-long opportunity to build, well, quite frankly, we need some spirit going on at that school. And we need some leadership in terms of allowing students to have that voice. So as a principal at Santa Cruz High School, that's where I like to devote a lot of, not a lot, but enough funds so that we can accommodate our student needs in that particular area. Again, all students come with different needs, they come at different levels, and as a administration team, you are very explicit on making sure that you're providing those opportunities for kids. Starting out with a strong guidance program in order to provide all students the information that's necessary for the opportunities, not only at the high school, but beyond the high school program. And I know that counselors at all of the high schools devote time not only in small groups but in larger sessions so that they can disseminate that information to their particular classes. Advanced placement, all kids can be successful in advanced placement as long as they're not only provided the support, but most importantly, it's the invitation. Come join advanced placement. It's sometimes as simple as that, because some kids don't understand that they actually have the skills that are going to make them successful. Eliminating some of the barriers. You have to take a test. You have to have a 3.0. You have to do the summer reading. So some of that's, it's not necessary. You take the kids as they are, and as teachers that you explicitly assign to these particular classes. I know, as a principal at Santa Cruz High, that the best teachers that I have are not the best, but the ones that can accommodate the needs in advanced placement are in the right place. And that's the most important thing, is making sure the right person is in the right place, in the right seat in the bus. strategic placement, a lot of conflicts, especially when you're dealing with schools of 900, 1100, 1200, it still doesn't give you a lot of flexibility. And so you have to really think about what the placement is, whether it's every other year or in the afternoon or the morning, or does it conflict with band or drama or programs that sustain kids in high school. So you want to really make sure that you're really making clear choices so that kids do not have to make that choice of the passion that they've been involved in several years of their lives. So it's opportunity, it's supporting for all students, and making sure that you're always listening. So ultimately, when it's all said and done, the kids decide what we do at the schools in terms of the schedule and building it. Michelle.
Hi, Michelle Fourier, Santa Cruz High School Assistant Principal. So one of the things that basically is a strong partnership for a master schedule, I want to talk about something that the counseling offices at all three of our high schools do to make certain that parents and students, families know very well about what the master schedule is going to offer them over their 4 years. It can't be a surprise year after year, this class is coming up. Oh no, I missed my chance to take this class. So what all of the high schools do, it starts in September and October, every single freshman family receives an invitation to come into a small group setting, and this would include probably at most six families with their counselor of their alpha. So it's a nice small setting, so people will ask the questions. It's very, very individual. Lots and lots of questions get asked, lots of interchange of ideas. And what they do is they put together, they show what the whole entire program is, what is ahead, what are the many pathways at the school. CTE pathways, it's brand new for a lot of families to be having exposure to taking a CTE pathway rather than just looking at A through G. And everything gets, you know, basically everything gets described, explained, etc. So then what the families will do is they'll create a four-year plan. And it's just a roadmap that doesn't have to be followed exactly. It's a living document. It can change from year to year. But after that is set, they kind of can see where are they going to fit AP Physics? How is that going to fit into a plan? And then they can make a really intelligent plan for what was their ultimate high school goal to prepare them for whatever post-secondary opportunity they would like to pursue. And what's nice about that plan a lot of times is that as months go by, as years go by, the counselors are pulling that plan out again and referring to it. And sometimes it keeps a kid who's sort of wavering toward, oh, I want to have such an easy spring semester, to going, well, that was a plan I made. And if I decide not to take this class, I'm disrupting that plan. So that's one of the ways that plan can support the guidance program, because it gives the counselor just that little bit of an impetus for that student to continue to pursue something that's set in front of them. And it's good. Obviously, it's good metacognitive things where students learn how to set goals and achieve goals and see that great goals down the line are achieved by small steps along the way, ticking that off. I did that, I did that, I did that. So the four-year planning workshops, they take quite a bit of time on the part of the counselors, but we really feel strongly that allows for a lot of individualized attention. And so all of the high schools adopted the model, and we really all feel very positive about that. Thank you.
Hello, Derek Kendall. I'm the assistant principal at Shoreville High School, and this is my first opportunity to speak in front of you, so thank you, Chris, for inviting me to be a part of this presentation today. Okay. I'm a bit of an analytical thinker, so I jumped at the slide that deals with math and numbers. And I had to write the numbers down so I was sure to get them correct. In addition to the four-year plans that Michelle spoke of, we also meet with our juniors and our sophomores during the school year. And we also meet with the eighth graders from our feeder middle schools. So by the time we sit down to start developing our master schedules, we've met with four grade spans in preparation to do our work. And when we meet with them, we collect data on their needs and their goals and their expectations, as well as their assessments. And we use this data to make both short and long-term predictions about their needs. For example, a short-term prediction might be, how many English classes do I need this year? And a long-term prediction might be, how many freshmen are showing that they might want to take an advanced language class when they're juniors? And so now, does my current English language department have the capacity to meet that need 2 years down the road? And what do I need to do now to make sure that it does? So let's take a look at a short-term projection. We'll stick with the example of freshman English. I'm going to use easy numbers. I know we all have pretty big numbers in our freshman classes this year. I know ours are close to 350. So I'm going to use the number of 200. And we set a target of having 25 freshmen in the English class. So that's simply 8 English sections on my master schedule board. But what if 75 of those freshmen want or qualify for or show an interest in an honors or an intensive class? So now I need, again, simple math, 3 intensive sections and 5 general English sessions. But of course, in real life, numbers aren't quite that neat and tidy. So let's say that 90 students want an intensive or honors course, leaving 110 to fit into my general sections. So we have to make the decision, and it's a difficult one, of whether or not we're going to stick with those 3 intensive sections and bump our class numbers up to 30 a section, and thereby lowering our general classes to about 22 a section, or do we make the decision to offer an additional section of intensive, thereby lowering those numbers to around 22 or 23, but then increasing our general. So it makes for a lot of conversation and a lot of sort of student-focused decision-making to make sure that we're doing what's best for our kids. And of course, this is just one example in one subject area, but we make these choices across 9 different subject areas and 4 grade spans. And that can get pretty difficult. But we rise to the challenge and you do our best. I can think of one specific challenge that I had when I left Soquel in June. I had a need for 5 Spanish 1 sections. But when I returned in August, I had a need for 6. And so working with the district office and with my principal, Miss Alimo, Mrs. Lansky.
Oh, something
sorry. We didn't Mrs. Lansky and the Spanish teachers, you know, we had to find a way to make that 6th section exist, and I'm happy to say that 191 students will be getting Spanish 1 this year. So, and I know my colleagues probably have examples of their own where they made those same decisions in the weeks leading up to the start of school.
Hello, Tracy Ranieri, Harbor High Principal. So I don't know if this is coming through, but building a master schedule is actually, it's kind of fun in a sick way, because it is so challenging to look at those numbers and figure out, you know, well, what does that mean for next year, and how is this going to help our students, and what if we move this thing here? So it is kind of fun, and it really takes all year to do this. Some of the things that were mentioned, going to the middle schools and looking at who's coming in and then what's the size of the senior class that's leaving. So that takes a lot of time, but it is challenging and it's full of possibilities. You know, we're looking at resources when we're building a master schedule. We've got our students and we need to meet their needs, and then we have to look at the human resources that we have, and those are our teachers. And earlier you were talking about, you know, the importance of teacher retention, which we all agree on. And that plays a big part in deciding what subjects the teacher is going to teach, how many different subjects a teacher will teach for new teachers, what subject that will be, and for how long someone will stay in a particular subject area so that they can feel comfortable. You know, it takes a lot of work to build a curriculum for a class. So we like to keep teachers in one subject for at least 3 years so that they can feel like they're getting their feet under them, they've been successful, and then maybe in 3 years we change something else. That's a great, that's our goal, and people resign because of the cost of living, and we hire new people, and so sometimes that's not always possible. But these factors all play into building the master schedule. The reasonable class sizes, of course, that's important. We want the job to be manageable so that we can keep our teachers, and we want our students to get all the attention that they need from their teachers. And so we might not have exactly the same numbers of students in each classes because the needs are going to be different. In a newcomer ELD class, it might look like crazy to have 15 students in a class that's so small. But those are 15 students who are coming from August until February. And so that is really challenging for a teacher and for students. When we add classes for students that have needs. We use supplemental dollars for the most part, and different schools have different amounts of supplemental dollars. Harbor High has the most LCFF money and Title I money, so we're able to have more of those types of intervention classes than some of the other schools, but they also make choices based on their supplemental dollars for aides going into the classroom and other ways that we support students in the master schedule. Reasonable workloads, I talked about that. And then, you know, in a master schedule, when you're looking at placement and some of the choices that Derek talked about, we also have to sometimes make adjustments based on, well, if we're offering an AP computer science class and the computer room is, you know, this room, but we also have a math class or something else, we may have to move things to different periods, which can affect student choice also. So we're trying to get all those moving pieces into one grid that makes sense for everybody. And, you know, when we make those choices, we're looking at what our goals are. Our site administrators, in terms of process that takes all year, we try to communicate those goals as clearly as possible to our teachers, to our parents, and the site administrators get input from teachers about what they would like to teach. We usually say, you know, what are your first, second, third choices for teaching? We take that into consideration with how many sections and classes we have, and then that guides our focus when we're making those choices. The APs do the fun part, which is the dreaming, the building it, and they work with the principal to help make those decisions and get lots of input from teachers and students and counselors along the way. And finally, when it comes to making hard choices, if it comes down to a facility or are you going to have a bigger intensive or honors class and a smaller regular class or vice versa, we're going to look at the students and what's going to positively affect most students most of the time. You know, we want to make it possible, those four-year plans that students come up with, those plans are based on student goals, and we have to make it work with the resources we have, the teachers we have, in one schedule every year. So it is fun, and it's challenging. That is the end of our slideshow. I'm wondering if there's questions for any of us about any of the items that we talked about.
Allison.
Thank you so much, all of you. My father was an assistant principal as I was growing up, and we knew never to talk to him when he was working or try to slide something under the radar because he was always busy when he was busy with master schedules. So I know it's a crazy puzzle, and I really appreciated you walking us through you know, what goes into that, those decisions. Lots of times when it comes to the board, when we think about master schedules sort of at the end of the year when a section is being cut, it's a very difficult decision. And so I wonder if you could walk us through how you look at student enrollment and numbers to make that difficult decision when a course is needing to be cut. It's often electives that it seems like it's usually electives. But could you kind of walk us through the decision-making process? I know we've heard about, oh, there's been declining enrollment. Like, how does that data influence the courses that we mount in a master schedule?
So we look at a lot of things. We look at trends for a course. Has the trend been historically had a low enrollment, and is this going to continue that trend? And if so, maybe we want to have a slightly higher number in a different class, or we want to look at students' alternate choices and see if that makes sense and can fulfill the same requirement. So looking at, and when I say trends, I'm looking at lots of things. Trends in the number of students who are enrolling in class, and then a trend with the curriculum. So with elective classes, it might be seeing how things are aligned with Common Core. Is this a CTE pathway, for example? You know, is this something that's going to fit in our long-term goals for students? So that would help influence a decision. Yeah, I mean, well, almost all of our elective classes are A through G, but that's another good example of one thing we might consider. Is this a sustainable class? And if it's not an A through G class, it might not be.
Can you speak a little bit to what happens when enrollment declines? So you've got 350 students this year in your ninth grade class. You've got 300 students next year in your ninth grade class. How does that impact the number of sections across all nine departments?
Well, it depends, but you can reduce the number of FTE you have for your entire school if the whole population goes down. Frequently, what happens is you shift from a grade level, so that's part of that, teachers teaching three subjects for 1 year. If the classes move like that, then you might be someone who only got to teach English one year because now you've got to follow that freshman class to the next year.
Tracy, I want to jump into that. One thing they had up there is they gather, you know, the information from the middle schools. So that's the preliminary information that we have as far as what students want to take. And then we have our lovely March 15th deadline of staffing. So the timeline for master scheduling and staffing is really tight, and it's not the best, but it's what we have as far as the law is concerned. So, I know, if you get 100 kids that are saying they want to take a certain elective, but last year you offered, 90 kids who offered three sections, and now you only have enough for one section. So that's kind of that student-centered master schedule, too, is looking at those course requests of what kids have and then making those decisions. And then we take appropriate action from the, from human resources as well. But it's a tricky timeline, and oftentimes that changes, but not always, and some sections do get cut. But it's because of a declining enrollment or declining of interest or increase of an interest in something else.
Yeah, totally. Thank you.
Didi.
I'm not sure who can answer this question, but I'm really curious about projecting enrollments because I'm a department chair and I'm struggling with that all the time. And you mentioned that you have all your students map out 4 years, mm-hmm. what they're planning to take. I was wondering, are there specific mechanisms that any of you used to use the four-year plans as data for making those projections? Mm-hmm. Will I need five sections of whatever class? Because all of these students are going to be juniors then, and they're all planning according to the four-year plan to be wanting, AP chemistry mm-hmm. in that year.
So usually what makes it a little bit easier for us is that we can look at the grade levels and we know typically which grade level students take some of the higher level science classes, and we can kind of lump that together when we're having to rush to a March 15th deadline and say, well, we know we've got, X number of 11th graders, they're going to take chemistry or physics, and that could include AP chemistry or AP physics, but we can still say it's X number of sections for science and then adjust later on. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to do any computer input of those four-year plans. We can really look at the trends that I mentioned earlier and kind of lump it all together. We don't have to separate early how many students are going to take AP English versus English 4. We just know it's all English.
Yes. Sheila.
I really appreciated this presentation. Ever since my daughter was at Santa Cruz High, I've always been amazed by how you ever get through this process. I mean, it's so much more complicated because, like you said, it's not 200. It's not an even number, and it's not a small number. So I really appreciate it. You've been talking a lot about the master schedule, but also we have all these other interesting parts of what you're doing in terms of helping students with barriers to taking AP and all that kind of stuff. And I have had the same request made of me probably at least a dozen times this year, maybe even more in the last couple of years, that I wanted to pass on to you. You have students coming. To some extent, some of them are the special ed students, but often it's the 504 students that are coming to you from the middle schools. Or that are in your schools and have been defined that way. And what people are asking is, how do they find out what classes are likely to bring up what barriers to their students? They're asking, is there a way that they, at the beginning, when their students first come to the high schools, also went to the middle schools, for that matter, or they first have a problem that leads them to have a 504, is there a way that they can be educated as to which classes are going to cause which problems? And I think that's increased because of Common Core. And because writing is demanded in a lot more classes, I'm hearing people say, how can I tell how much writing is going to be demanded of my child and how much somebody is going to help them with that barrier? So parents are constantly, and kids, are constantly having to decide where the line is for their kid. And we could say to them, oh, well, you can always overcome every barrier, but we know that's not always true. And we know that sometimes they're ending up with C minuses and Ds and seeing college say goodbye to them. Because they're making wrong decisions. So I want to pass on to you that that's a question that's being asked. And when people ask it of me, I have to say, I don't know. I'll just go ask it. Because I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't know what parents can do when they say, my kid wants to take calculus, but I hear that they have to write a paper on calculus at the end. And is that true? Is there any other way around it? Can I do this with my kid? This is what my kid always has trouble with. And I want to know, do I tell them to go ahead and do it or not? You have that group of people who probably could use a sit-down, organized way to present this to them at the beginning of high school and maybe the beginning of middle school. And so I'm just passing it on to you because I'm hearing it more, I think, because Common Core causing a little more of it.
Well, you know, there's two things that we do to try to address that. It's because it's not easy, and every student's different, and every reason a student has a 504 is different. But, you know, Chris mentioned in her superintendent's report the group of people that went to the Visible Learning Conference. That's what we're working on. You know, we want instruction to be strong and address all of our students' needs in all subject areas so that it's not a mystery, or you have to worry about, well, I should choose this teacher, take this class. Everyone is focused on the best strategies for instruction for all of our students. She talked about the high leverage strategy. So that's something we're working on at all the schools. And the other thing that we do is the counselors sit down with each student at the middle school and talk about the classes. They know the students have a 504. They talk to them about maybe their IEP, their special ed needs, and you know, we get recommendations and look at the information from the middle schools as well. So we want to have the students, that transition can be rough, so we want to be supportive, and so that's why we take time to go to the middle schools and meet with the students.
Specifically, you addressed the writing piece, and writing is becoming more and more essential in every subject matter. And what I think sometimes we forget is writing is probably the most difficult thing to teach. How to write, and so what, you know, some of our focus is to ensure that all teachers understand how to write, and all teachers understand that it is important in math and science and social studies and every subject matter that you need to be able to understand how to write within that content area, or you need to be able to understand the simplicity pieces of writing that will help students understand in all content how to write. So it's a I guess my point is, we also have to focus on teaching the adults on strategies to implement to teach all kids and to get to all kids on how to write, how to read.
And I agree with that, and I think it's a very difficult thing. So I think I would love to believe that everybody is going to do it so that every kid feels at home and able to do it well. I also disagree with Common Core to some extent. If you want to know whether a child knows a subject, you just don't find one way to prove it, which is through writing. You know, some children can't write well what they know. They can do it much better. But I know at the university also, it's the same thing. Yes, everybody ought to be able to do the same thing, but they don't. So we have to teach our kids how to figure out where they can succeed and how they can succeed and how to advocate for themselves. And I think that that's, I'm glad to hear they do it at the middle school, although I'm still hearing from middle school people, so something's not quite right there. But I think it's a big part of us, if we're going to push up the expectations, we have to make sure we've got the kids feeling like they, and the parents feeling like they understand what the hell is being asked of them and why their kid can't be accommodated when something is being asked of them that they know is going to be a problem. So I'm just thinking if we had such a sit down with them at the beginning of the year or at the end of the year before kind of thing going on, that we might be able to pick that up better.
I'm gonna, thank you. Move on. Thank you. Patty, you were next.
Thank you. Michelle, you started and you said that there is a small group sitting down usually with the parents and the student sits with the counselor. I'm familiar if I had a student in the district. And at the time, it didn't seem to go from the September, October, I think, success with the students at the center of decision-making comes along with the parents participating and whatever outreach we can have. Can you tell me how many parents partake in the offering with the counselor to actually sit with that plan to understand that there is a map, even if it's just the loosest of maps for students? And then what type of outreach we do for families that school is not often in high school a place that you'd find support for them just because their basic needs are taking away? So I know we spoke to Harvard having more dollars follow. By October, have most students finished their plan at all three comprehensive high schools?
I would say yes for Santa Cruz.
Okay, yes. Mr. Kendall.
So, Cal, we made the decision to change the order of how we do our senior, junior, sophomore, freshman meetings.
Freshmen are last.
We did freshmen last.
Yeah, they have been for several years.
We do seniors first.
I understand. Yeah, you can't be at the end of the bridge and then say, oops, so yeah, we got to fit in PE9 for you somewhere today.
So we're doing freshmen in, we do freshmen in January.
So I guess to that I would ask that you consider a mechanism for the parents to be, the ninth grade parents to be involved. I don't think there can be two of every counselor or whatever, but you need the support of that in the system. And then at Harbor High, the outreach to make sure that families of different culture can feel welcome to this process and what it will bring for their student to help make that roadmap and support. I would imagine that there aren't as many parents showing up and your high needs due to their own work constraints and such. So I just want to hear that, because as a parent of a student who went through this, I remember that roadmap and word keys. They went alphabetically. The counselor was very good, but I was a very proactive parent. And then, of course, at some point I had to understand I had a teenager, so that student was at the center of it all. But in order to find success for all students, as Sheila was looking for in her question, I think the parent is a huge component.
I would say, you know, the four-year planning sessions and the structure of them have evolved over time. We've gotten, you know, the APs and the principals have shared what they do at each of the sites. And I know at Harvard we have at least 90% of our families come. It's not students involved in the four-year planning, it's parents with the students. Yeah, so, but that took, there's a lot of details involved in doing that, so that took time to figure out how are we going to make sure that our families show up. So we do makeup sessions and we do evening sessions, and each school, you know, depending on what works best for their parents, has adjusted for that.
Yeah, I mean, for our Spanish-speaking families, they get a phone call from a Spanish-speaking person inviting them explicitly to their family planning workshop.
Thank you. I just really wanted to know how many parents are able to understand that that commitment will really help ensure the success of their student, and that there's no surprises along their expectation of their student as the teenager also shows them who they are. You know, some parents will think, well, parents do, you know, quite often parents will think my son or daughter will do all AP, but, you know, I pretty much wouldn't do all that work, so I can't imagine, you know, the teenager doing all that work if they decided not to. So I just wanted to hear how close you guys are on that.
Right.
Thank you.
Jeremy.
You addressed or you asked specifically about families of different cultures. And I know at Soquel High, our ELAC committee hosts a night each year where families are invited to come, and our Spanish for Spanish speakers class actually gives the four-year plan to families of Spanish speaking parents that attended ELAC.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jeremy, do you have another question? Sheila. Go ahead. Do you have another question?
A rhetorical question: to what extent might our thinking about scheduling change if all three comprehensive high schools were on the same schedule? Thank you.
I was waiting for that one.
Rhetorical.
It's
rhetorical.
We
were silent.
Michelle, we go back a long way. You can give me a rhetorical answer. Not really.
No,
thanks for listening.
Uh-uh.
Thank you.
Well, I think that there's a lot of thoughts from our leadership team about schedules and how our high school schedules, if they were aligned and if they're not aligned, what the pros and cons are of that. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of conversation about that. There continues to be ongoing conversation about it. One thing that I think is really exciting that all three of our high schools have decided to put collaboration time into their schedules. That didn't exist until a few years ago, so having that time for professional...
Collaboration time within the schools or collaboration time between the schools?
Both.
We haven't heard about that this evening.
But that's not... That's, it's
not
a part of
the
bill.
In terms of the creation of schedule.
Yeah, yeah. So it's...
that's another question.
It's complex and it would be a really long conversation, and we have four more board presentations tonight, so, but it might be worthy of coming back to.
Thank you
very much. Thank you all so much for being here.
Good luck this year. Okie doke. This should be a short one. Next item is the bond projects update.
Oh, you're supposed to do the public.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was a long discussion.
Comments from the public.
Casey Carlson from the Federation of Teachers. So we had two comments. One was along the lines of what Jeremy just said. We're seeing more split schedules, and the fact that every school in our district has their own unique schedule is making it harder. So there's this balance between we're trying to fund in the most prudent, cautious way possible, saying, okay, we can't have this many FTE here, we have to share them, but then the schedules don't line up. And if we're going to stick to that line of reasoning, where we're going to be prudent with our finances, we may have to start looking at somehow schedules aligning more closely so that people wouldn't have such crazy splits to their assignments. One other piece of data that we're interested in collecting as you start this process would be having counselors this fall look at the data from when students come in and change their schedules so that we know that students sign up for certain courses in the spring and then reality hits and then the first 3 weeks of school come and they change courses. And I know as a former case manager in special ed, sometimes students would have, you know, really ambitious ideas about taking a class that was challenging, and they might sign up for two or three challenging classes and come back and say, I can't handle it, and then they're going to move to an elective. And then if we have made our electives so tightly staffed, there's no room, sometimes they end up being office aides, which is something that drove me crazy as a teacher because I don't feel that's a worthwhile use of our students' time. So I'm wondering if you can go to the counselors this year and say, what was the pattern of students changing courses? Where did they end up when that happened? Thanks.
Are there final comments from the board? Yeah. Okay. Now we will be moving on to our staff bond projects update.
So tonight, what we plan to do in the next several board meetings is bring each of the architecture firms forward to you to hear a presentation about the specific projects they're working on. And tonight we have some representatives from Maddie Architecture, Ralph Lewis here, DJ and Marielle's here as well. And Troy's going to join them to share with you the things that they're working on. And I think Ralph over there, there's the... Sorry.
Enable content.
Oops.
Hi, I'm Ralph LaRue with Mandy Group Architects. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I'm really excited to be involved with the school district. I've been doing school projects in this county for 15 years. Worked with most school districts except Scott Valley, but I've worked with all of others. I live in the community, I love the community, and I look forward to presenting these ideas as we flush them out. So we've just started along the road, made a lot of progress. We've started some smaller projects, and so I'm going to be introducing all of those to you today. So I just wanted to show you the team, that it's not just me. We have a team. We have a support office in San Jose, and the main office that will be responsible here will be Santa Cruz. I'm the president and also the program manager for the MADI projects, and I'll make sure that those projects, have the resources for success. And tonight, Mariana and BJ are joining me.
Good evening. My name is Mariana Alvarez-Parga. I'm Director of Architecture and Sustainability at MADI Group. I manage the San Jose office, and I'll be closely working with Ralph in some of the design meetings and overlooking the production of documents in each phase of the project.
Hi, I'm Vijay Jayachandran, one of the co-founders at MADI. I'll be involved in the master planning and cost estimation phases of the projects.
So tonight we're going to touch on all of the sites. As you can see, there's a lot of work coming up, and so we're just going to give you an overview, and feel free to ask questions along the way or at the end. We do the smallest projects and the largest projects, and the small ones are equally as important. So over the storm we had a lot of rain this last winter. A tree fell down at the adult education school, damaged the portable. We did an assessment report. That report was used for your insurance purposes. District was refunded. We went through DSA, got the plans approved. You guys approved contracts with American Modular System for the portable. And we are now hurrying up to try to get that portable installed, which will be a new portable, same shape and configuration, but brand new, set at the same location. We're aiming for that project to be installed. Grant support is small schools is a fantastic campus. It's got a lot of beauty and a lot of potential. And you know, with the portables on the campus, there's opportunity over time to, obviously, we want to get rid of those and leave them up the campus and make it a great educational space. Right off the bat, we've identified some key safety issues right now. On the left there, you'll see Trevor identifying a couple of stairs that need to be repaired, and literally we'll be trying to take care of that within the next couple of weeks. And then we're looking to do a full stair finish replacement. In parallel, while we're doing all of that, we're going through and making sure that we have accurate backgrounds for the school. So we receive a lot of historic data that may not be correct. So we go into the classrooms, look at every single wall. We meet with the principals as well to start the site master planning process. So you guys did an overall master planning process, but we really tried to dive into what does the site need, mm-hmm. and do those needs match the budget that you have. Mm-hmm. So we'll be taking that list that you see on the bottom left-hand corner there and packaging that up into distinct Division of State architect projects with allocated budgets, and I think that would come back to you guys in the future for approval. Some key projects that could move ahead quite quickly on the site is the alternative education, adult education project. So we'll be setting a date to meet with that team to to lay out their new goals. Bayview Elementary, I think, was the first project we were released on, Bayview and Villa Viega. Again, we analyzed the site. The key with this site is that we have portable configuration on that site that is not aligned in any way. There's a lot of nooks and crannies where it could be out of the line of sight. So that's kind of key to look at that site in the future, to rebalance that site as we master plan it, so they have a safe playground area, better drop-off area, so you want to totally extend that drop-off, get the cars off the street. That's a busy time. It should be safe. It shouldn't be frustrating for the people dropping off their kids. So the first thing we do before we ever try to make any decisions is to understand what the makeup of the campus is. We do a site utilization, so we actually go in every classroom. We color-code it per grade. For the classrooms where there are two grades, we'll do the dash like that. It quickly gives us a picture on how the grades are spread around, so it informs us. And in working with the principal and the staff, and how they want the build, the layout to look at the end. And then we start the process. You'll see second draft. That means that we've had two meetings. This doesn't mean that any decisions are made. We start looking at options. How do we extend the drop-off? And we start taking snapshots of how that site may look in the future. We come up with some great ideas and some terrible ideas, and we run it through the mill. So we meet with people on all levels. We'll meet with a small group that the school puts forward that represents the teachers. At De La Viega recently, we presented to the full teach body. Everybody was invited. We'll meet with parent groups, and of course, ultimately, the decision will be with you guys, and we'll be presenting flushed out versions of master plans for each site. And then, out of those master plans, obviously, the Division of State Architect projects arise. Key on all these projects is interior classroom modernization. So as you heard earlier, we did get lucky with this project. We got a bid that actually, when we calculated it, fell within your budget of what you had allocated for the full project. Also, when we bid it out, we knew that the bid time was really bad, that we wouldn't hit our budget and there was no labor to do the project in the summer. So we scheduled it after summer. As it turns out, the lowest acceptable bidder became available to do the project earlier. And so we snapped up that opportunity, and we got going. And when you're completion, I'll look into the fact that there may be some dust in the classrooms. That's unacceptable. So we'll follow up on that. Here's some between project. This is actually a little bit dated now. The roofing is almost complete. And then a non-bond project. This is our second project. We repaired Natural Bridges fire damage that you had a couple of years ago. But our second project with the school district, a non-bond project, fantastic project in collaboration with UCSC, is the DROPS project, Drought Response Outreach Program. The whole idea is to manage rainwater and to recharge the aquifer, and also to demonstrate it so it becomes part of the educational program. So we touch the life lab. Mm-hmm. We make sure that the playground becomes pervious. Mm-hmm. And we display right in the front of the school with some tanks and a rain collection garden. Unfortunately, when we built this, it was and probably the busiest summer that I've encountered since I've been doing schoolwork for the last 17 years. And we've decided to try to pull this off next summer. And along with this project, we'll be making a documentary, probably 8 minutes documentary. So that's an exciting aspect. The La Viega, very similar to Bayview in the approach that needs to be taken, but the La Viega has a lot of walls where there's a sound transmission. Different types of walls, not really the stud frame walls that you see in most schools. A lot of those walls will have to be replaced to limit the sound transmission between the walls when we get going. So just, you know, mentioning a few key aspects. We went through a similar process. We evaluated the school, every space. Principal loves this diagram, by the way, because it helps them with their program. And then we took that, and we also had a couple of meetings, and we'll be updating this based on feedback that they've given us and build that to this school. Natural bridges, we were just recently asked to do a report on the structure. Of course, you have a piece of property there that is not being used right now, but you want to protect your investment. There's particularly bad roofing here. Your front parking lot is asphalt is failing. So as those cracks widen and the water gets under the asphalt, it will literally fade over time. So fixing that is an opportunity to allow better access to the school anyway in terms of ADA. And then there's a few minor interior fixes that need to be made. quite a key project that we're moving ahead with as quickly as possible is a repair of the community, or the multi-use gym. Could be well utilized, but it's really aging, and it's really evident if you look at it. There's if you look carefully, there's lots of dry rot. We plan to strip the exterior and put powder wearing materials on the outside, and then also to resurface the floor. We have the opportunity to rebalance where this flooring of striping goes, so there's more space on the coach or the player side. We're trying to pull this off to be complete by summer next year. And we'll be able to provide travel with a more exact date than that, but that's kind of the time frame. So SoCal High is our newest contract, and it's the largest school. We've literally had a couple of staff members in there for 3 weeks looking at every space, documenting the asphalt configuration on the inside, every classroom where the whiteboards was the TV, because as we modernize that, we have to, you know, develop the detailed plans. We are busy doing, as I said, spreadsheets on which projects can be funded by this bond and which projects may be funded by a future bond or state funding as well. So next time we present, or the district presents budgets, it'll be more finely broken down per phase. Some smaller projects that we are going on. I actually spoke with the lady from the sign manufacturing company today. The sign is being fabricated across the country. They are finalizing the artwork. This is a mock-up I did to include the logo, but they've got the actual high-resolution logo directly from the school, and we'll incorporate that. And so we're hoping to install that. Fabrication takes 6 weeks, so within a week, I'll know an exact date, but they should be shipping that sign in about 5 or 6 weeks to us.
Where are they going to put it?
So that's up in front at alongside the entrance drive. And then with the tennis courts, we had aimed to resurface We couldn't quite pull that off before the season, so we're doing some minor repairs, and the aim is to completely resurface those courts. Thank you.
Are there questions from the board? Patty.
Thank you, Mr. LaRue. Very nice to meet you. Just a specific question, because I know the tennis coach, and that when we have the resurfacing of the courts, which obviously cannot happen during the season and hopefully can happen in between because the men's season or boys' season comes in the spring, does that also include windscreens and nets, or is it just the hard surfaces? What does the bond include for this?
Well,
particular
this,
for all three of our courts? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I interrupted you. So that's your question. But when I've been involved in this project past, we've done it. It's all come out of the bond. The nets, the, you know, the windscreen stuff, that's all come out of the bond. What I've done.
So follow up to that, have they ordered the windscreens and the nets, even though the surfaces may not be complete for the girls' season? Can we?
I haven't been asked that question, so.
They'd be so happy.
Okay.
Thank you. At all three sites, I mean, because all three sites have tennis teams, and they all have male tennis teams coming up in the spring.
Thank you.
Maybe.
I'm just curious about logistics, given that you and your staff have to be on these sites and doing that fine-tuned inspections of the spaces and what's there and what needs to be, concerns need to be addressed. How do you do that when students are there and work around the students and the staff?
How do we do construction or design?
How do you inspect the sites when you've got classrooms and students and teachers logistically?
By finally scheduling it with the staff, we get intimately, we have their cell phone contact number, they get to know us personally. My sister Presley schedules things very finely around their schedule. So, you know, we're in One River Street, so it's really easy for us to react and go after hours, to set meeting after hours, or go really early in the morning.
Thanks. Are there other questions from the board? Any comments from the public?
Thanks,
Rob. One last piece. When can we expect more? Because you'll obviously, large groundbreaking will happen as soon as school stops, and any breaks that you can get, anything to more refined plans and the outreach to the community. Because we did it in this fashion, and now we're going to do it again. So when can we expect?
So what Ralph was saying earlier, Patty, is that's a master plan. We're doing a site-specific plan. While we're doing a site-specific plan, we need a calendar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Transportation update, staff report.
Yeah, thanks to Trevor and Emil are going to share the news. I understand that there was about a year ago or so, you heard an update from a team regarding the age of our fleet. So this is kind of revisiting that briefly. Thanks to Emil for being here today, who does an incredible job for us. Emil is a person behind the scenes, but is often the face of the district of families, and does this incredible job of working with people. So we're so grateful for Emil's hard work and his persistence. He's been responsible for applying for grants. So what we're going to talk about tonight, too, is applying for another round of grants to address our aging fleet. And throughout this process of applying for these grants, we'll come back to you again in terms of what that plan might be to finance how we can replace our aging fleet. Some of these vehicles are 21 years old. And quickly, I'm going to share with you some of the expenditures we've been incurring recently for repairs. And what we spend annually is somewhere in the neighborhood currently about $75,000 on an aged fleet between repairs and leases. The cost to purchase new vehicles is incremental, but they're going to share some of that with you, too. So I'm taking away your thunder.
Thanks, Pat. And Pat hit the nail on the head. Emil has done an amazing job. Most of his team are 11-month employees. Transportation only stopped for 1 week this summer. All the programs going on, it ran completely through the summer. In that 1 week, he was scheduling the start of new school. So The team does a phenomenal job. They had an awesome first day, no incidents. Everyone was happy. They got there when they were supposed to. We didn't lose a single kid this time. Never lose a single kid. So most of this information you've seen before. I mean, we went over it. But we wanted to bring a little bit of an update just because there's a couple of really key things that have happened along with some discussions we had about goals. The fleet is aging, and it's only getting older and older, and repair bills are high, and they're also somewhat unknown. With the age, any major failure can occur at every time, and we could be replacing things again and again and again. We're spending, on some vehicles, about a quarter of what they're worth to buy the new one, not what they're worth. A quarter of the cost per year we could be spending on a new one. But most all of this information you've seen before, as we get to the very bottom of the page, that's the one I really want to draw your eye to. AML's managed, in working with the ADs, to come up with, we actually increased their activity trips 107% this last year. That means more kids are going on field trips, they're going places, they're doing things. And it's amazing that we've managed to do this with this aging fleet. Where we really fall short is in the big buses, getting our athletic teams to the place we want to go. What we're doing is we're renting buses. So they're still going, but we're paying for somebody else's fleet, not our own. So as part of this process, we want to try to change that dynamic where we can be in charge of our own kids, do it more cost effectively, and I believe safer because we have such a great team. Again, this chart is very similar to what you saw before. It's a little updated based on we got rid of a couple of buses, we bought a couple of new ones, and we're leasing a couple to keep us on the road. One of the interesting dynamics with the fleet is you only need so many buses a day for the kids, and obviously you need a spare or two. But CHP says you have to have a minimum of
30%
in excess of your operating fleet. We're right on the edge. Constantly right on the edge. So that's another concern that on any given day, a couple of little breakdowns and all of a sudden we're out of compliance, CHP shows up that day, they can shut the whole fleet down. That we don't want to happen. So we're sort of walking on the edge. And AML's done an amazing job of keeping the fleet running. So one of the things we want to talk about is these grants. And last year we applied for some grants and we got them, but we weren't in a position to really do anything about it because Pat had only been on board a short time. We didn't have Greg yet. It just sort of came. We weren't really expecting it, and we weren't in a position to really take advantage of it because we didn't know if we could afford to spend it. We're going to try to reapply for these grants, but we thought we'd bring this to you tonight, get you up to speed to help give us some direction as to what's going to happen after. So this goes into a little bit of what the grant is. It's through the EPA. They don't replace buses. You get $15,000 as kind of a deposit type of thing for the small buses if they qualify, and $25,000 for the large buses. It's not an insignificant amount of money. We have five small ones that are currently eligible and one, a large one, that's currently. That's $100,000. So that goes, that's more than 10% deposit, so that's a good thing. Another interesting fact is the buses to qualify have to run 3 days out of five. They have to be part of your regular fleet. So if by chance we get five new ones, the next hurdle to go through is how do we keep the other three or four old ones in the mix so that we can apply for the grants again and get them. And AML and I have talked about this a lot, and it's I think we can do it, and we're going to try to do it. That's the goal. But it's going to be a challenge. So those are the things. And also, obviously, current and continuous in their CHP certification, which means they can't have any super significant things which would get them decertified. I don't know exactly what that would be, maybe a cracked chassis or something, but it's an interesting dilemma. But like I said, we've got some plans. This is part of our plan, is to reduce the cost of operating by using eight small buses and two large buses. That's really what we need to have the perfect fleet. Can we get there? Probably not in one step, but maybe a couple, three. So initially, we're applying for this grant for five small buses and one large bus, and if we're successful, we want to pursue that. And then the next step is to pursue it again the following year and get those last three small ones and maybe another one of the large ones covered. We have submitted a lot of grants over the last year or so. none of them have come through, but Emil's got a... Why don't you read what
sure, I can share with you. There's several revenue streams we've been trying to tap into. One was through the Monterey Bay Air Quality Control District. That was back in 2016. That was in February. Then the EPA grant was also in September 16th. September 2016. Then in November 4th of 2016, I went to Sacramento, met with Lisa Jennings with the Air Resources Board. She's their grant. They're the head person, part of the grant for retrofits and new buses. And she gave me some guidance on that. April 13th of this year, applied for the Rural School Bus Pilot Program. And then on May 15th of this year, again with the Monterey Bay Air Resources Board, they have the retrofit application. We currently have two buses in that queue for the retrofit. And then we have the Clean Diesel Program, which we're discussing here today. It comes out in October of this year. One of the things I wanted to share with you is that the Air Resources Board in the state of California has a large amount of money. Their focus over the last year to 2 years has been to and away from diesel to alternatively powered vehicle, which is electrical, liquefied natural gas, propane. Where we live and what we do with the hills that we have here is incompatible with technology. And when I met with the Air Resources Board people, it was with a symposium of everyone from California looking at the money and where we're going to go forward. The biggest complaint was, is you're asking us to spend $400,000 for a bus, and we don't know how long it's going to last. And they were talking about other vehicles by the major companies, like I think it was Coca-Cola came up with and purchased 40 vehicles that sat and are still sitting today because we're all Mark 1s. So here we are in Santa Cruz, and we're looking at the free stuff. And so one of the nicest grants that I looked at was the free electrical buses. We didn't qualify for that, but you know, you get two free buses. You keep them in the lower flats. Our students are from Davenport all the way down to the south side of SoCal and all the way up very close to the San Lorenzo Valley. Very narrow streets and hills. So the type of equipment we really do need is high torque, and so we can go up the hill safely. And ideally, see, our bus fleet is two steps, one's for the special needs, one's for the field trips. And so what I'm really looking for is an opportunity to replace our younger fleet, or our smaller fleet, because that's not where we're going to get a lot of grant money. So. Yes?
Oh, sorry, Sir Kitchen, please.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that's kind of it. That's kind of where we're headed. Let you know that we're really, really hoping that our fingers crossed. There's a dynamic to the change. So originally we looked at a lease program to get five buses because it really reduces our cost, our cash flow issues. However, there's a tweak to the program is you have to own the bus, so you can't do a lease. So we've been talking internally about how does that look? Do we finance it through, you know, the bus agency? Do we finance it from an outside agency? Do we finance it ourselves? So when we bring the plan back, hopefully we'll come up with what we believe is the best. And I know between Pat and Greg, I'm sure they'll come up with something really good and creative.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you. Thanks.
Other questions from the board? Go ahead, Dee. Go ahead.
Okay. I just have a quick question about the athletic and activity trips and the increases.
Yes.
Which athletic teams use your transportation services?
Currently, we're transporting all of the high school football teams.
Okay.
And that's the extent of the athletics. I've been approached by the swim team. We've also transported Santa Cruz's basketball team. And they went into their... they're very successful last year, so they took to some of the final games. Preponderance of the trips are coming from B40 Middle. They're taking their side trips. We're also doing some harbor trips. We're also doing the elementary school, what do they call up there by Roaring Campus, the Wilderness.
Science.
Yeah, Science Camp. Yeah. Then we also have Watsonville. We're taking each one of the elementary school sites to their fifth grade in the years since, you know, plus also with Emil Lane. So we're seeing some increases. Also, for the first time, I was able to help in the booking of farm buses. And so we're mainstreaming, and I'm actually looking up to the school sites to convene to book a bus from outside carrier. And so we're using commercial carriers as well as SLV. And Pablo no longer provides service. So it's really difficult if I'm a teacher, how am I going to get my students into a program? And so I'll return to me and turn around and find a way to do it.
So that's a good point. One of the things AIMO's brought to the table is not only a willingness, but a skill set to help coordinate that. So now the school sites have somewhere to call. Mm-hmm. You know, they call AIMO and he makes it happen. So he can get them the information, how much it's going to be, what it looks like, times, all those types of stuff. So now they've got a resource that can do that work for them to make sure they get something that's appropriate. So rather than the teacher trying to rustle up a Silverado deal or whatever, they're coming to transportation now. So our next steps along the line is to try to make this more automated as well. We can actually provide something online on the website so they can get at least a ballpark idea right without having to take any time at all. So they can think about how easy it's going to be, do we need to fundraise, what that looks like. And then once they can commit to it, then again, we can step in and fine-tune the details and make it happen. But again, we can have our own fleet that's a little bit more
reliable.
I'm going to use that word. Something that's more appropriate for like going over the hill. I mean, a lot of the teams go to the San Jose area, and we don't have equipment that can do that. Not safe. So
if I could ask a follow-up question, it's my understanding, and Hans, correct me if I'm wrong, that the football teams have changed leagues, so they're going to be needing to do a lot more traveling. And how is that being factored into the transportation needs for football teams?
And that's part of this plan, is to try and increase that large fleet with modern buses that have the appropriate braking systems that can deal with that hill. Because even the buses we have, even if they're in good condition, really aren't the most appropriate people to go over that hill. They don't have the modern disc brakes and that type of thing.
So you
can
use the rentals for those purposes?
Yes.
Are there further questions? Any comments from the public? Thank you for all your hard work.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate that grant work. That's amazing. Thank you.
Good luck on that.
Keep up the good work.
Okay, and now we have new business. It's a parcel tax oversight committee bylaw revisions for first and or final reading.
Yeah, we brought to you tonight a revision to the bylaws after a lot of discussion. Let me see if my screen will... Since I have my technology. We brought you a revised version of the bylaws for a first reading or a potential action. It changes and it focuses on both the composition of the committee and a lot of the backdrop to the challenges that the committee faced was reaching a quorum, having a quorum. So this is a smaller group of folks. And then we also have in here a change that addresses, at the beginning of every meeting, it gives the public the opportunity to speak to the parcel tax committee. So that's, we highlighted what we provided to you. We underlined each of the new revisions, and we addressed the composition, and we also addressed the ability for the public to provide that input to the oversight committee as well. So that's what we brought forward to you tonight for your consideration.
Jeremy, go ahead.
I like it. It looks great. I think it was no comment about what it was, what it will be. Hopefully it will be smaller, more efficient. You'll have your quorum. The only thing is it's late, and I would prefer just to postpone a final vote until next school board meeting. And my only question is, will that create any problems for the parcel tax oversight committee?
I believe your next meeting is before the first parcel tax oversight committee.
Then I would propose just seeing, I would humbly propose for us as a board, because it is late, just to sort of see this as a first reading and That would be my take on it, and I really appreciate the work you've put into it. It looks like it's going to be a much more efficient board.
I'll second that motion.
I didn't say it as a motion.
Okay.
We've talked about this for a long time, that we had an untenable size, and it got more untenable as we got more bonds. So I appreciate 90% of what's here. I have a little problem with the inviting the community thing being the only piece that's in there, and I have a problem that I think I believe that we promised the present Parcel Tax Committee that they would know what was coming and have a chance for input. And if they're not going to have a meeting, then perhaps we can send this to them and ask them to have input if they want to, because I do feel like we kind of promised them that. But I actually had a different idea, and I'm all for leaving it for one more time, but I'd like to put it out there that it seems like we could have a, I don't know what to call it, advising committee, or maybe something more mild than that. Rather than it just being, well, the community can come if they want to, that there is a group that actually gets the agenda, that is identified as people who have particular interest in the areas, we have parcel taxes, and that we welcome to come, and that we make sure that they know when the meetings are. Rather than just having it be anybody can show and anybody can have an opinion, because the people we have in there have been hardworking and passionate people for the most part. And as you and I both said at the last meeting, there were things that we would not have seen had it not been for them explaining. It was a way of looking at things that it wasn't that we didn't notice things, but we didn't notice them with the way that teachers or staff were noticing them. So I would like to see if we could be more specific and more respectful, to me, more respectful of those people by not having it just be kind of like, well, come if you want to and say something if you want to, but rather acknowledge that if they want to stay and be part of a group that commits to showing up and giving opinions and giving feedback, that would be welcome. So I'm just throwing that out, and I also agree that for that reason, as well as for all the other reasons, that we don't make this the final reading.
Are there other questions from the board? Yes. Edie.
Sorry, I'm standing.
I'm there.
I'm ready to stand, too. Can you explain the rationale between D&E?
I'm sorry.
In terms of membership. D is one member shall be a parent or guardian of a child enrolled in the district, and then E is one member shall be a parent or guardian of a child enrolled in the district and active, blah, blah, blah.
Active in the PTA?
Yeah.
It's fairly common. If you look at a lot of different parts, I looked at a lot of different oversight committee.
Okay.
And that's a fairly common committee member,
yeah.
So,
an elected officer and an elected officer volunteer from the PTA.
Part of PTA, and then just someone who's not part of the PTA, just a parent.
And just any old parent.
And
an uninvolved parent.
Well,
one whose purpose is not to.
Because we're going to get an unengaged parent to commit.
Yeah. PTA has sources of funds too, and then some folks are not affiliated with it.
Yeah.
And so they have valid concerns,
right?
They can act in that capacity and be again the it shows me, but the role of the committee is to say whether or not the expenditures are in line with the language.
Okay. Can I ask one more question? Is there a reason or a rationale behind not having an elementary parent and a secondary parent representation?
Truthfully, I didn't get into that. If that's a suggestion that you might make to have that, then I think
sure,
that'd be
that's
a fine.
A suggestion that
I think I'd rather see that, a parent, an elementary parent, than a homeschool club and a.
Okay. Sure.
Since we have two parents on there.
And any old parent.
And any old parent.
So it sounds like there's some amendments. And I heard an interest in making a motion to have this be a first reading. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can someone make that motion?
I don't think we need to make the motion because it says first or final.
It's new business. Can we just move on?
Mm-hmm. When it is new business, we would like to have a recommendation that means from the board. It may not be a motion, but maybe a recommendation that this is a first reading and that over the next couple of weeks before it's brought back, board members can submit suggestions to the superintendent for other language they would like to see included.
So moved.
Seconded. Thanks, Nancy.
Do we have any more input, though, before we...
Sheila's got her hand on the mic.
What was that?
Oh, you're just resting?
I was just going to say what Jeremy jumped in and said.
Was there any comments from...
I contacted Elaine and Sue Fikes, Elaine Bellavent and Sue Fikes, in disregard to make sure that they were in the loop. Sue Fikes had been a past chair of the parcel tax, and Elaine probably was the longest-serving member representing the GSCFT. And they both said the bylaws were exactly as they expected them to be. They shared the interest that Sheila talked about in that they wanted to make sure that that an email went out, you know, to the teachers, to all the employees and groups, and said, "Parcel tax meeting coming up. You know, if you'd like to come and observe, here's what it's happening."
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. So our next item is new business to approve. Sorry, I'm on the wrong agenda.
First and final.
It's the CSBA. Thank you.
I'd recommend that this be a first reading as well. There's a lot of material here. Had a great conversation with Casey and Matt about the policy on controversial issues. Mm-hmm. And both Casey and Matt brought forward language that taken directly from the Common Core state standards and from referencing our board policy, that really fleshed it out and helped. Because as there are a lot of controversial issues in current events and politics right now, I wanted to be thoughtful to make sure that that policy really informed and supported our classroom teachers. And they brought forward some great recommendations, and you have them. Mm-hmm. And I'd encourage us to review them, and I think I just appreciate their collaboration and problem solving and great thinking, because I think it makes it much better.
Any questions or comments? Okay, so the recommendation. And our last item is the lease-leaseback agreement for Harbor High and the SoCal Pool project.
So we're really pleased to bring forward tonight recognition for the two distinct projects, the selection of a contractor that we went through the lease-leaseback process. And Trevor's going to speak to you, just give you a quick summary recap of the lease-leaseback process. Since you've been advised by Devin recently about lease-leaseback, we're not aware of any changes to the law. We're not aware of any changes since you have been advised recently. Trevor's going to walk through a little bit of the lease-leaseback methodology with you and the process that yielded the result that we're bringing forward to you tonight for recommendation. And if I'm correct, Trevor, what the action the board is seeing tonight is to enable us to engage in this contract with a contractor for pre-construction services relative to these two projects. And then we'll talk about the GMP process too.
Hello again. I'll try to be quick. So that's just a little outline of kind of how it looks. The district is going to engage in a contract with the lease-leaseback builder. The architects are also contracted with the district. The builder contracts, the trade contractors are venturing. This first step is all about pre-construction services and getting to that point. So lease-leaseback has all these different assembly bills and all these other things, public contract code that has been changed a lot in the last couple of years. So there's a whole new dynamic in this thing, and that's why we work so closely with our attorneys to make sure we've got all our I's dotted and T's crossed. So the steps that we go through are defined by these above requirements, and the documents are given to us. Every document we use is provided by Lozano Smith. There's a little blurb there about why we're doing it, increased collaboration. Reduced risk is a huge one, and better value as well. The experience level that we received from people who are interested in doing this for us was amazing. Mm-hmm. Right? It was just some amazing contractors. our process here, the first thing is get everybody pre-qualified. So under the law, anyone who's doing work over $1 million has to meet certain qualification criteria, and there's a standard questionnaire. So a number of months back, you approved a contract with a company called Quality Biz. So they're a third-party, independent, online-based group that has a whole process that meets all those codes and laws. So they get us a group of contractors pre-qualified to do our work for us. The advantage to them, as I probably mentioned back then, is anyone who signs up through Quality Biz doesn't have to duplicate all that paperwork, all those financial statements and all that. They can check boxes for other school districts. So they have a pool of contractors that if they get notified that a new district is putting out projects, they can go, oh, check the box, send my stuff to them. And so that'll show up on our list pre-qualified. So it's easy for the contractors and easy for us. So then the next step is the Dolly's advertising requirement. So we polish in a paper at least a couple times. It goes out into the trade papers. We put it in the plan rooms, which is where all the contractors kind of get their information from. And then any quality bidder, qualified general contractor, can also request a packet. The next step is we put the RFP out. The RFP is basically guided for us by Lozano Smith. Other than filling in the blanks of the name of the project and the dates and that type of thing, it's pretty much just a cookie-cutter document that needs just project-specific information. Everything else is a template based on what they recommend. So we go through that process. We did the resolution when we brought that packet to you originally, which had the matrix and stuff in it. So then the next step, obviously, as we go through the process, there's two parts initially. One is a qualification, so they submit their documents with, it's got a very structured series of points allocated and a breakdown. So within each point structure, there's very specific questions and answers. I mean, it's as rigid as if you don't follow our guideline, you may not get any points. It's as rigid as if your workers' comp insurance is higher than one, you get zero out of that section. That section happens to be 20 points, which is a fifth of the total score. So there's a couple of contractors that, for various reasons, fell into that. That's a real hard hill to climb over. So we add the scores of those first two. It's not pure scores as they get ranked. Whoever's first will get 100. Whoever's second gets 90. Whoever's third gets 80. So you can be splitting hairs and all of a sudden go from 100 points to maybe only getting 60. So it's very rigid. Not sure that I'm totally on board with this yet, but it is the rule, it is the law, and that's what we're doing. As stated, those approved documents are from our attorney. We add those two up. We find the ranking, and what we spelled out in our request for the proposals is that we would interview the top four. I assumed at the time we probably wouldn't get four. Turned out we did. We got a great response. We had five in one category and six in another, which was a surprise, a pleasant surprise. We had that much interest from quality people. So then we go through and we interview. And once we've got the interview, we add that to the tally. So the whole thing is then added up. And basically what you end up with is a number at the end, and someone's ranked one, two, three, or you may even get a tie. Ties, we have the ability to go, who do we want and why? So there could be a tie between two contractors, but one's a lot more expensive than the other. So if they're both really quality, you would go with probably the less expensive one. Or you may choose, you have the ability to choose one that you believe can perform better. You know, you're under no obligation. So it does give you some flexibility that way, but how you get to the numbers, rigid. So anyway, we added the numbers up, we did it, we went through a process. Due to the time of year we're doing this, we're trying to push this along so we can get these projects moving. I was hoping to have some principal and someone from the county on our interview panel. We couldn't get anyone to come along. What we did instead is we inserted, and Ralph's still here, we inserted Ralph. He doesn't have a stake in this particular game. He eventually will on his projects. But we sourced him to come in. So we have the architect, whose projects they are, We had Ralph and Pat and myself. So we went through independently, graded them all. Pat and I sat down, went through the numbers, added them up, and there you go. I see Patty's got a question.
Well, I do. So as I understand it, or as I'm trying to understand it, did you just explain what our district policy is, that you're making public detailing our lease-leaseback solicitation process?
Mm-hmm.
So you just gave it to us verbally. I haven't seen this. And then on the panel was you, Pat, and the architect who's involved in this matter. I'm not sure if that's the greatest oversight for protecting the district. As I understand it, there is Ed Code that had the lease back. And last year, the governor addressed with an assembly bill 2316 what you were explaining, the best value selection process. I can say that I can get behind three internal pieces within our district making those recommendations. I hope the board will hear this. Could be a little more checks and balance. I'm not sure. I understand the intent of the governor was they had some problems in different districts. It's not that I want to slow anything down. But I need to fully understand how this decision was made and who will be making decisions and bringing them forward for a request for proposals. And your grading sheets being told to us in the aftermath of whoever you picked, instead of in the prior, who came forward and how they scored.
I'm not sure how we bring grading sheets ahead of the proposal.
So,
well, I think it's something to think about.
So I want to go back. We followed the process outlined by our attorneys, and we followed the process outlined by the law. And we did all those things that Devin came and explained we'd walk through. We did that. We don't have to include anyone outside of our agency, and Trevor did say that because there had been interest in the board to do that, he made an effort to try to get people there. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get anybody to come and participate outside of our team. It is typical for a district just to have their own team be a part of selecting the contractors they're going to be working with. These projects are projects that got delayed because we decided to do more community input. Mm-hmm. If we further delay this, when we've followed the law and gone through all of the pieces, dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, did everything we were supposed to do by law, and had a very thorough process that included this first screening by an outside agency that did the whole first set of scoring, was done by this outside independent company that we contracted with. So they did a whole first round of scores, went through them. And those were averaged into the total three series of scores. So there was that outside agency, completely unconnected to us, that did the initial screening, has a set of scores. Then we had the second round that had a set of scores, and then the interviews that had a set of scores. So this is a really complex, lengthy process that involves a lot of screening and in-depth work, and our team spent a tremendous amount of time on this. So I would be concerned that we wouldn't move forward with the work that our team has done tonight, because we've absolutely followed the law. We've done a process where we've vetted both through this outside third party and our team to make decisions, and included one of our architect partners in the process. So I would be concerned if we didn't. There will be a delay in us being able to lock in prices with contractors for our pools and our field project if we do so. Yes.
Jeremy.
I guess I'm a sucker for process questions. So how do other districts do this? Is our process similar to theirs? And then I have one question after that. Pat, could you answer?
I would tell you, I think our process is similar to other districts.
Do other districts, for example, if they can't find a volunteer who is not an integral part of the district, forgive my ignorance here, but if they can't find a volunteer, or maybe my naivete, do some districts pay for an outside person to be the fourth set of eyes on the final decision?
I don't know, Jeremy. I've not heard of that. Oh, please.
You're educating me, so I thank you.
Having done this dozens of times,
yes,
as a consultant,
yes, sir,
for other districts like yourself, it's typical that the district provides its own team, and usually, I would say probably half the time, an outside individual as a check and balance. Now, this is a brand new process. It's only been implemented this year. So there's a lot more rules and rigidity to it than there used to be. But it is typical to use the district team because they're the ones that have the best interest of the district. It makes no sense to have a bunch of outside people that don't understand the district, really don't have any skin in the game, to come in and make decisions for you.
That's
you rely on your architect professionals and those types of folks and your CBOs, system superintendents, to do this kind of work. That is the norm.
Dee Dee had a question.
Thank you.
In the interest of transparency, you mentioned that it's a fairly rigid system of making the selection, except when you get down to the bottom, or the top five or whatever. And then if there's a tie, then the group can sort of weigh the pros of each company and then say, well, we want this one and here's why. Maybe if you would share those instances with us as you're making your decisions, that would help us understand that this was the top score, but this
particular
selection
was the top score.
Okay, and so
I was just saying those things could happen. It didn't,
okay,
but it could.
It didn't. Yeah. And so you're really confident with the selection, given this very elaborate scoring system?
Yes. Like I said earlier, I'm not sure, this is the first one I've done with Lozano Smith under the new rules. And the rigidity of it, in some ways, I'm not 100% sure, gives the district enough flexibility to make what they believe is the best specific choice for the circumstance, because circumstances and choices can be looked at, as Patty's concerned, kind of alludes to. There's potential for things to go sideways. This is so rigid that's it sort of mandates you just get whatever you get. Now, the good news is typically anyone who's getting to that point is ultimately qualified. It's just, maybe when you sit across the table from someone, just go, I just don't like you, right? And so now you're forced to work with them for a long time. This process doesn't really allow you the flexibility to say that. So at this point in time, as we go through these numbers, the next step in the next few days when you've made a decision, I'm going to share all these numbers, because by law I have to, with all the respondents. And the other thing I'm going to do is try to get feedback from them, and depending on what that is, go back to our attorneys and go, well, here's where we see some issues. Because again, the goal is to get the best fit for the district for the long term, not just necessarily the best price or the prettiest brochure or the cleverest accountant that produces the best document. We want to make sure it's the best for us.
Just to add, as we discuss this, as Trevor says, this is a new process. This is historically the lease-leaseback process was much different. But this is intent behind, I understand, the legislation. It's put structure to mm-hmm. that process so that it is less arbitrary mm-hmm. and less subjective, that there is an objective and a subjective component to this process. Mm-hmm. Because there is a lawsuit that has been outstanding for some time in the state of California related to this.
Absolutely.
And it's a long story, but that's how ultimately it became part of this law that has changed. And I know there was inquiries, well, if we have any other changes with this lease-leaseback law, we're not aware of any.
The other thing I want to share with you, too, is that what we've said to several folks, again, well-known, talented folks, we said, we're talking about $10-12 million of projects. We have another $200-plus million of work to do. So these folks are also interested in partnerships, long-term partnerships with the districts. Some of these folks have that relationship with other districts, too. I anticipate that several folks we had conversations with will be knocking on our door again as we go to the next project. Mm-hmm. And if there's an interest in us collectively having yet another outside entity be part of that team to go through that objective selection process, independent scoring process that we did independent, then I think we have an opportunity to do that. And so if that's... But I agree with everything that Trevor said in terms of the process, what the superintendent said as well, too, the structure that we followed that was spelled out, the scoring criteria is spelled out in advance so that it doesn't change midstream that somebody that, you know, you have a preference for whatever reason. The scoring is what it is. And the independent scoring, like Trevor said, we sat, we went through it, we threw it into a spreadsheet, and then the result came out. So if that helps frame it, there's a lot more work, $200-plus million more work to do. If there's a suggestion, like I said, we made an effort to have somebody else come in from the outside who's in it. But I'm not familiar what your suggestion was, Jeremy, outside somebody that you pay to do. I've not heard that. But it's a creative idea. I'm not aware of it. Trevor's got much more experience doing this than I do.
I've never paid anybody to do it. We usually manage to coerce someone in my position from another district or another architectural firm or you're looking for professionals in the field that have an understanding of the process and kind of what you're buying. But never paid for anyone. Unfortunately, timing on this one, first week of school, first week before school, come back in, that type of thing. None of the county office people wanted to participate. None of the other local school districts wanted to participate, unfortunately. Because I always like to have one that doesn't know things. Because sometimes they see things.
Mm-hmm. Patty.
My question is, were we given the set of criteria prior to you bringing forward this XL construction? I have no problem that this may be the best. I just want to make sure that when we set up our processes, I believe in the spirit of this law that it was to be informed prior to this so that we knew who was on the committee and who was moving forward. The lawsuit that you speak of in Fresno is a big deal in the state, and lots of attorneys are part of it. And we have neighboring districts who have some issues right now within their bond controls. I would like it to be, this is nothing personal, this has nothing to do with the XL group, but what it has to do is by what process are we moving forward, and what are the internal checks for this? So,
The process is law resolution 26-16-17 that had all the criteria spelled out in it, and the matrix and the requirements.
So we had that through when Devin came to see. I think we can be a bit more public about it. It's come through that way, and I hope that we would. But I don't feel that I completely understand this to say yes, not in any way to arbitrarily stop the project. I just think we need to start thinking a little bit differently how we proceed.
Jeremy, did you have another question?
A very quick point.
Okay.
Pat, I'd like to meet with you sometime between now and then to talk about how perhaps we could coerce someone, for example, from the County Office of Education to come and see how it feels to have that fourth set of eyes in the future. I very much appreciate you saying that we'll attempt to see how that goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as long as I feel that you and Trevor and this gentleman, whose name I forget, I apologize, would be open to that,
absolutely.
I'm fine.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
So the item before us is a recommendation from staff to approve the contract with XL. We can have a motion and then just and go to
the
public.
I'm approval.
I'll second.
Okay, are there questions or comments from the public? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
You can't abstain. It's in our bylaws.
You have to say yes or no.
No?
Okay.
No?
So 6-1?
Yep.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, so we are about to return to closed session, and we'll come back after that.